you needed. It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with the Brian Campbell. Look, we know what you want.
Is that what gets you off? Don't you understand? We get them off.
Yeah, we do with our pro wrestling podcast every Wednesday in these parts. This week, no different, coming at you, fulleth extension of that syringe running over with another injection of that performance-enhancing audio. Look, folks, it is holiday season. What, I don't know, Labor Day, one of the holidays, but it's time for you to get out there and give us that five-star review if you haven't yet on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. Let's get up to another threshold, all right? Let's get up to another number. Spread the word. Spread it like butter. Just spread it. Thank you very much. Back with another loaded show and a really good special guest you're going to want to check out. NXT Women's Champion Shayna Baszler stopping by these parts to get us fired up for what it means for the performers once NXT on September 18th goes live, goes 2 hours, goes national, brother, on the USA Network. Full breakdowns of all things All Out, NXT UK TakeOver Cardiff, and more with your boy BC and my co-host. Why don't I just bring that guy in right now? I'm sure he's got a lot to talk about after such a big pay-per-view in Chicago, folks. No Punk. It didn't happen. Did anything else happen? We're going to have to get into that. But here he is for you.
Say hello to the bad guy.
Yes, he's a hurricane survivor down there in South Florida. Some say he never hedged. He hates hot tubs. He's the Silver King, Adam Silverstein.
More like a hurricane avoider, I would say, than anything else. Lucky. Because
yeah, man, you seeing that footage out of out of the Bahamas? Bless up to those folks, man. Water on the second floor. I mean, wow. Yeah,
we haven't seen anything like that down here to that level since Hurricane Andrew in 1994. So 15 years ago. Is that 15? No, 25 years ago. Sorry, damn. Hashtag math. Yeah. So that was 25 years ago. We haven't seen anything like that. You know, building codes here have gotten a lot better, but. But the truth is, this one, for South Florida at least, it avoided us. It was no joke. At one point, 75 miles due east of my new house. Like, it was sitting there moving at 1 mile per hour, and at any time it could have just turned left. And if it did, hey, that new house Silver King bought may have lasted about 2 months. And who the hell knows? So very lucky, very happy to be here. Obviously, back in the office, this is the first day that we're fully back. And ready to go, ready to talk some wrestling. The truth is, I boarded up my house this weekend and had nothing to do but two things.
Meanwhile, your house was like,
I'm bored, brother.
It was. I had nothing to do but two things. One, watch week one of college football. Two, watch professional wrestling. I didn't think I'd have time to get through all of it. I got through all of AEW All Out, all of NXT UK TakeOver Cardiff. I think that's the full legal name. And I'm ready and raring to go for this show today.
Yeah, happy Labor Day to you and yours, Silver King. Happy high five to all of our listeners out there. Thank you, as always, for the tweets and DMs. We get them. We read them. Sometimes we even read them on the air. And, let's talk wrestling. I, too, had a relaxing weekend with a lot of time to just sit around and watch it. I mean, I watched every damn second of All Out. For better or for worse, Adam. So I am ready, armed, itching to get going. I'm pretty happy.
How happy is Katie Vick?
She's dead, Trips. That's not happy. By the way, how about that little hullabaloo with Enzo and Cass going to NXT for a hot second and then Trips just dropping a doogie publicly on that one?
First of all, I absolutely loved what Trips did to that. He also, in that same interview, I believe it's with Talk Sport, which is a European or United Kingdom outlet, which is not that dissimilar. I believe he also he was asked about, hey, you know, everyone's saying Vince is going to take over NXT on USA Network. And he basically is like, yeah, that's dumb because that shit ain't happening.
Yeah, he was basically like, Vince has no time. And yeah, I mean, that was very, very refreshing to hear about the future. That could be one more nail in the AEW coffin. Although, look, said it from day one, about to tell you about it in the main event. We can't judge these guys until the TV show comes out
We're not going to judge October them until 2nd. Their third pay-per-view or
but,
their,
but, can I, but,
their
you
TV
know,
show.
Hey, let the comment unfold. But this was an interesting event and week that doesn't necessarily have this side of the revolution fired up to where this is going.
You know something, brother? You're crossing the line right now into some real dangerous territory.
Yes, Cons. Yes, Rhodes family. Let's get your ish together. All right, let's see what other business we have to get to, Adam, before we get knee-deep in the main event. Adam, do you need your football fix by any chance?
Yes, Brian, I do need my football fix.
Oh, hey, great. Let me tell you about the Pick 6 NFL podcast on CBS Sports, available every weekday morning to keep you informed on all the news, analysis, matchups, with the fantasy and gambling advice that you, Silver King, crave, just like our listeners. Why don't you tell us about these guys, Will Brinson and guests, who will be reacting immediately after Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, so we don't have to wait to hear them breakdowns of the games, Adam.
Oh, yeah. Well, everyone here at CBS Sports in our podcasting department is taking a page from State of Combat. Silver King pushed BC a little bit. Hey, let's do instant analysis around the biggest wrestling events. Now you get it here with State of Combat for the biggest boxing and UFC events. And our other podcasts are joining in on the fun. So you have the Pick 6 podcast doing it after the NFL games, as Brian mentioned, on every big night of the week. Our college football podcast, Cover 3, every Saturday night after the majority of the week's games at least are played, hits you up with instant analysis of college football. That's what we're doing here at CBS Sports Podcasting. We are getting you the takes hot and fresh out the kitchen immediately as soon as we possibly can.
Yeah, you want NFL hot takes. This will make you happy. This will fire you up.
This will protect you. This will love you.
It will. It really will. So after the Patriots and Steelers wrap up this Sunday, get ready for an extensive week one recap from the folks at the Pick 6 NFL podcast. Download and subscribe to Pick 6 on Apple Podcasts to follow football all year long. And please tell them BC sent you. All right, Adam, you got to sell anything? You got any outdoor items for sale after this hurricane? Anything?
Yeah, I have a lot of plywood that you can come pick up at the Silver King's house for free. Take it with you. I want it out of my house right now. Please, you just have to help me take it down off the house because it's still up there right now. No, but in all seriousness, Pick 6 Podcast, actually a great podcast, as are really all of them that we produce here at CBS Sports. Got a couple tweets this past week praising us, praising the Cover 3 podcast. Well, if you listen to those two, you will like the Pick 6 podcast as well. And this is the best time of year to start listening because we're week one. Game start Thursday. Let's go.
But BC. One-ish. Yes, yes. What do you got from me?
We aren't here to talk about football. We're not here pro, college, none of that. We're here to talk wrestling, professional wrestling. And the way we do that every week is by starting with the main event.
This is the main event.
And really, BC, there is no way to start a wrestling show this week without talking AEW All Out, and as you said earlier, for better or for worse. And I think, by the way, I responded to that comment earlier, you have an inkling at the direction Silver King is going. So let's just start out big picture here, right? We are now 4 AEW official events in, that is not counting All In a year ago, which wasn't AEW, but it was really many of the same people with some help from Ring of Honor. We had Double or Nothing, Fight for the Fallen Earth Fest, and we also had this AEW All Out. So I want to know two things. One, what are your thoughts taking all of those into perspective, combining all of them into one, and then talk to me about AEW All Out specifically and whether you think this delivered as the show that is kicking off this brand and its new television deal.
I think I want to answer your questions. There's only one question I want to answer after Saturday night.
I'm all in. Are you all in, Brian?
That's a problem right now. So as a whole, Adam, it's hard for me to grade that because, again, until that weekly TV show comes out, the reason why I harp on that, why we can't judge them until then, is because that's the real competition, the weekly TV show, not the quarterly pay-per-views or these in-between shows that really didn't hit the mark. And the reason, again, why I double down on that is that's when we are going to learn the really important things about what this brand brings. The dialogue, the promos? What will the shows and the things that happen in between the matches look like? Like we said last week, if it looks like the road to All Out, damn, we could be looking at a great product. We don't know yet. So it's really hard to give a full complete grade. But am I all in on All Out? No, I'm all out. Wasn't a train wreck. Wasn't a bad show by any means. It was actually a good show. Here's the problem. They needed great right now. They didn't need an uneven show. They needed great. This was the launching pad. TV is less than a month away. They needed great, Adam. You know what they really needed? They needed Double or Nothing. That's what they needed. If you could go back in time, Cher, if I could turn back time, Adam, if I can find a way, I would have almost not done what they done the last 9 months. Not put out in-between shows to keep the brand in the public eye. And had a show that killed like Double or Nothing. That slayed on multiple levels. On pacing. On quality of matches. On reveals. On the introduction of new talent. And most importantly, on sending you home high as F, Adam, about pro wrestling. What did we say the next day after Double or Nothing? Damn, I want to see what TV looks like. I want to see what Jon Moxley's going to sound like and what's going to happen next. Unfortunately, that pay-per-view happened in June, and it's now the first week of September. And All Out, it was the quality of an in-between WWE pay-per-view where there were highs and lows. And I'm not going to take the slander of people who were like, this was a failure and a train wreck. Dude, there were highs in this show, but it wasn't spread out properly. And here's what I got to say about them. The show was too long.
Oh, yeah.
And 30 to 40% of the roster is not ready for prime time. So, and I mean like it's sagging the brand down. I mean like when you and I went to Madison Square Garden for that Super Ring of Honor NJPW show, you know, we came out going every other match was pretty damn great when it was Japan. And
right,
then
every other match was New Japan. Right.
And then the Ring of Honor stuff was largely missed. Couple hits. Matt Taven on the ladder. Great. Everything else, though, brought down the quality. Hey, AEW, I'm all about the future. All right? That triple threat weapons match? Dude, I love me some Darby Allin. I need a lot more of him in my life. I'm okay with that kind of stuff. But there are legitimate members of your roster who are not ready for this push right now. So, yes, you can sneak them in on the TV show and develop them. But on a pay-per-view like this that had the pressure that was supposed to launch your television show, these people are bringing down your brand, stretching out your show. You need to learn from Trips here. They actually have enough horses, but they need to take those horses, they need to package them better, and then they need to let them run rampant. Because when I look at this card, Adam, hindsight's always clear, 2020. But if you trim the crap off of this card, and you rearrange some of the matchups and certainly the order of when they went out there, they have what it took here to do what they could have done. But they didn't. And they failed in that regard. They didn't fail on bringing entertainment, but they failed on reaching the level they needed to bridge to the first episode of the TV show. The Chris Jericho-Adam Page match failed. That was not a main event match. They did not put over Adam Page as a main eventer. And to have it right after such a spectacular tag team match, which we can get into the specifics later if you want, but that was a come down and a fail that just didn't work. That title felt meaningless. The finish was abrupt and sort of okay. Everything about that did not scream the things that screamed at Double or Nothing when Jon Moxley DDT'd Kenny Omega on top of a stack of chips. So maybe now that we are seeing some failings, we can go back and say, I know, okay, you can't stop Jon Moxley from getting hurt, so you can't fix that. But maybe Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega should have been your first title match and should have been your main event. Because how it ended up turning out, this was a fail on the mission that it intended. I don't think the brand's a failure. I think the horses are there. But they got to go back into that think tank and figure out, we have a short window to grab people. Because like I mentioned last couple weeks, it's not about Raw and SmackDown versus AEW anymore. It's basically NXT versus AEW. And they may even lose that war if they don't figure things out, Adam, because you got to put your best foot forward now. And I don't even care if you focus your first two-hour show on three angles, but you got to put the best foot forward. A lot of this card was not that. And from the women to to even guys I like, even the best friends, guys I like. No, it didn't work. It didn't work. You got some work to do in your creative room and your locker room to really figure this out. Elements are there, Adam. Wasn't there though. The soup didn't taste right on Saturday night. Too much salt, too much of this, too much of that. No, I'm not excited heading into October 2nd. And that's what All Out's job was to do.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go the step further and I'll call it a failure. And me calling it that does not mean everything was bad. It's not true. There was a lot good. As you said, it should have been more like an NXT takeover. Yeah. You know, an NXT takeover is five matches. I can pick five matches on this card that if that's all I got, I would have been really damn excited. It wouldn't have been comparable to NXT Takeover New Orleans, but it probably would have been comparable to the last NXT Takeover Toronto. Five quality matches. Instead, there were 10. And the other five were not good. And you can tell me you like Joshi women's wrestling all you want. I don't care.
That needs to get off the screen, Adam. That needs to go away. That's pre-show
crap. You want to take Rio and take her out of the Joshi stuff and make her part of your women's division like WWE does with Asuka or Kairi Sane, although, look, we know we're not seeing them and we badly want to. That's another topic for another day. Fine, do that. That's great. Okay? But there is so much that AEW is trying and failing to do, at least to me, to the viewer who is Adam Silverstein, that is not working. And you touched on a lot of it, and I'll get to it. But there was also something glaring that kind of outshined this whole – not outshined, but it was a topic that was transpired throughout the show and led into it as well, because they did a PR interview story or something with Bleacher Report, which is a Turner-owned company, ramping up talks about AEW's diversity and how diverse their roster is. And before I even get into this, I'm going to first say their roster is diverse and it's great. It's not really even as diverse as WWE. It's just not. They don't have African-American male main eventers or even singles competitors, really. So, like, let's not even go there yet, okay, when you're talking about diversity. But they want to build this women's division. Their claim at the beginning is the women are just as important as the men. The top women are going to make the same amount of money as the top men. And they have Nyla Rose, who is the first ever transgender woman to be signed by a company, a major American company, win this battle royal. Win nothing against her. I hope she's featured long time AEW. She is not one of the top women in the company when you have Britt Baker and you have Tennille Dashwood, who, yes, was on loan from Impact, but she was there and so on and so forth, right? And then you have Rio win this other match. And it's just like, it didn't really matter who was going to win that match because they were both Joshi women and maybe some of their hardcore fans like it, but that is not going to appeal out of the gate to a mass audience, right? So that's your women's picture that you have right now. And it's almost like you're beating me over the head with the Nyla Rose thing because it's not about who deserves it or who doesn't, right? But I want a high quality first women's champion. And the match that you're giving me isn't going to deliver that. That's number one.
Adam, well, I want to stop you on number one and just say that women's battle royal, like, it was a train wreck. It was a freaking train wreck of not ready for primetime players, of botches, of lack of negative, of go home charisma, of X-Pac heat coming out of there that, like, you're building around Nyla Rose. This is not the person to build around. When I saw Double or Nothing and I saw that multi-woman match that basically was a showcase for Kaylee, what's her name?
Kaylee Ray,
who's now left the company and might be retiring. We can talk about that. But her and Britt Baker, I said, wow. There's chemistry. There's in-ring work there. If these two are the future of the women's division, no, this division is not going to be as deep as WWE. But we got something there. We no longer have something.
You mean Kylie Ray? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I botched that.
That's my fault.
Ray left the company. Britt Baker's still good, but here's the thing about shoving Joshi down her throat. I know there's a lot of our listeners. I've gotten the DMs go, no, you're wrong on that. That stuff's great. Well, that stuff may be great on an indie card, but you can't be an indie card. You're competing. You're the ones, AEW and Tony Khan, who sought out TNT, you know what I mean? You're the ones who are basically filling WCW's role 25 years later. You're the ones that are calling out Triple H and making these references. So it is a war. You need to bring better stuff, better ammo to the table. And if you find out the ammo isn't good, which you correctly did on Alex Marvez by removing him from the commentary team, then you make those substitutions. And before you get into your next point, commentary was a failure in the show. It was annoying.
People loved it. Grinding.
I like each of those three individual voices. I think they're good for the genre. In separate situations, I've really enjoyed them. They don't have it. There's no chemistry. That was bad. That held down the product that I was watching in the ring.
I mean, JR refused to refer to Jungle Boy as Jungle Boy throughout the entire match, and it was completely distracting. Is that Sasha coming in the room, or who is that? What's happening?
Zoe the cat trying to exit, but she has stage fright on exiting. It's a live show, Zoe. Come on.
I was curious. I see, you know, something happening off screen there. But to continue my other point here, so there was that with Nyla Rose. Then, and when I say all of this, it had to do with this story preceding the event and AEW talking so much and shoving it down our throats, this diversity thing. And they have Aubrey Edwards, which I believe is her name, as the referee in the main event of the match. The first women, according to them, the first woman to main event a championship match, or to referee a main event championship match, something like that, a men's match, whatever the hell the title was that they gave her. And here's the truth. Here's the thing. This is what really bothered me. I don't mind her. I think she's a good referee. She's good to be on their roster. I find her distracting, her facial expressions and some of her mannerisms and whatever. That's a different story. But on commentary, you cannot have Jim Ross say, "We have no one better in this company to referee this match than Aubrey Edwards," when Earl freaking Hebner is a referee on your roster. So these are just like, are they nitpicks that I'm coming up with? Yes. But it's all this point of AEW trying to say, we're so forward thinking and we're so diverse. Yeah. And we're so modern and we're everything that WWE's not. But if it's bad, if it makes your product worse, then no, you're not doing it right. WWE didn't have women main event its product until women were ready to main event its product. And you can't have a woman referee, as an example, and Aubrey Edwards be the referee for a main event when she's not the best option for your roster.
She actually distracts me
from the match.
All right, well, that's more of a preference for you. I thought she was great. True. You know what was distracting for me? Jim Ross struggling to spit out, "Well, look at this. If you notice, we got a woman in the main." It's like, don't mention it. You know what's more woke?
Exactly.
Not mentioning it. So,
exactly.
Like, what they should be doing, and we thought they were in the beginning, and again, we won't know till the TV show comes out, but they should be looking to do everything the opposite that WWE does that pisses fans off.
Yes.
Everything that's corporate WWE. And now, unfortunately, they're doubling down in the other direction. It's like, don't show us about how woke you are. Show us wrestling. That's why we cringe at the breast cancer segments and the Connor's Cure stuff. It's not that it's not the right move to do corporately. It's that it doesn't belong taking up a 10-minute chunk of our wrestling show. So don't show me your sensory areas for children, which, again, cool idea at a wrestling show. I don't need to necessarily know about it, though. Make it about the damn steak.
Right. I'm as progressively liberal as the next person, as a white male can be, okay? But I don't need it. Like, I don't need the check at the end of Fight for the Fallen being shoved down my throat, right? I don't need WWE. If you want to put the pink ropes on the ring, cool. If you want to have the logo on the ramp, cool. Don't mention it 17 times an episode and do a segment with 10 women in the ring. Do that during the commercial break, right? And put ads for donations, or if you want to run one video promoting Susan G. Komen or Connor's Cure during the show, do it, and maybe I'll donate. But if you're shoving it down my throat, it makes it less – look, like you just said, BC, be woke without telling me you're woke. That's actually being woke,
exactly.
And I hate using that word, but that is what it's all about. Anyway, that was just an aside, like beyond the actual wrestling that bothered me. But Brian, match by match on this show, being honest with you, like there were things I loved. There were a couple things, but it didn't really hit home. And when you even compare it to Double or Nothing, I don't think there was a match. I'm looking at it right now. There wasn't a match that lived up to Cody Dustin on this show. There wasn't even a match, I don't think, that lived up to Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega. That was a far better match than either Omega's match here or Jericho's match here. And it kind of left me wondering, and I said this when we previewed it with Jack in our last episode. I said, what made Double or Nothing so great was Jon Moxley. The show was good, There were things you really loved a little bit more than me, but
the
we
show,
both liked
right, the
it.
Show was great, Adam. All right, let's be
the
honest.
Show was very, the show was very good. Moxley got the headliners, and I thought for All Out, the only way they could really do that is with CM Punk. And
you had to bridge to the TV show, and you needed a reveal, a swerve. You needed something. Jericho winning in the end was arguably the most predictable way it could have happened. And yeah. then the show just ended. There's no bridge to, so even if you're not paying the money to bring in Punk, and by the way, Phil Brooks, I'm so over you, okay? So don't go to StarCast and don't tease anymore. Don't do anything involved with wrestling. You're basically dead. Or mixed martial arts. You're kind of just dead to me altogether. But Adam, where was the reveal? Where was something extra in the storyline? I know they were dealt a bad hand with Mox, okay? Pac and Omega, by the way, brought it, even without a storyline or any build. Great match, but not having a build or turn, or it held you down.
But even that match, Brian, should have been 5 to 10 minutes longer.
You got to go in your think tank and have something at the end of that show. Whoever Chris Jericho is going to feud with next, they got to come out and go face-to-face. Like something – you know what NJPW always does? A, they always send us home happy. But B, they've always got a little bit extra at the end to extend to the next storyline. And it's something WWE used to do all the time. They don't do enough of it anymore. It's basic pro wrestling booking, okay? And that's why we want an alternative to WWE, because WWE, outside of NXT, has fallen into stubborn corporate structure booking. Where it's like, I don't need to really please the fan. I'm going to please him 3 months from now. So today is fine. No, old school pro wrestling booking is constantly leaving you waiting and wanting more and can't wait for the next time they come to your town or the next TV show. You didn't have that here. And I don't see how you couldn't. I don't see how you map out this show knowing its proximity to your TV launch and not have something big. Chris Jericho at near 50 can still play a big role for your company, but him winning a title alone in a match that went on too long, that had a wasted blade spot, that just didn't do it, is not enough to close the damn show in 2019.
It makes me think that maybe they had planned for Pac to be there to do something else anyway, whether that was confront Moxley or Omega after their match, or confront Jericho after his match, or maybe who the hell knows, but it makes me think that maybe Pac was going to be that surprise. But going to what I said, that's why I was so sure that that Punk would be there in the Moxley role, because I felt like AEW really needed something like that to kind of juice us, as you're saying, to go on to TV on October 2nd. And even without it, even just judging the event as a whole, for me, there was a lot left to be desired from the matches. They did reveal LAX at the end of the tag team match, and that's cool. But to me, I mean, you even heard the crowd. They were like, oh, wow, LAX. And then they didn't care anymore because it's not a WWE superstar reveal. And unfortunately, AEW is kind of putting itself in that situation where it's like, unless it's like Rusev, you know, or Moxley or someone who is really angry at WWE and the fans can go, yeah, F you, WWE, we got this guy. It's almost like, what is AEW if not that? And it's their own fault for being that way. Not because of Moxley, but because of Cody with the throne and all the comments
right.
they make.
They put the pressure
stuff.
On themselves.
The best thing they did at All Out, to be fair, they didn't reference WWE, finally. Like, it was really nice that they didn't do it. But that's it only goes so far. And, Brian, we might as well start with the Jericho match and against Paige. Jericho being the first AEW champion, to me, you're starting a company. That's the right move. I don't care if it's predictable. You hear me say it all the time. But in doing so, in having Jericho win, you got to put Paige over as your star. All these guys talk about, this guy is the future of the business. They're even taking Kenny Omega and saying, Omega, we're not putting you in the main event because of Adam Hangman Page. And they have a match, and it said, you know what it said to me? It said exactly what I said in the preview. He ain't ready.
They didn't present him as being ready, unfortunately. This match, it should not have come in this spot. After that tag match, it failed to deliver. There was no in-ring chemistry. There were no fireworks. And I want to amend something that we just said. I'm not saying you have to have a Moxley-like reveal every time. I was arguing that you should have had something. But reveals are sort of a cheap way to get to a fever pitch point. There's a more organic and natural way to get to a fever pitch point. And it's called really good storytelling. something this build just didn't have, okay? It didn't. I know we had a Chris Jericho running last time on Page, and he bloodied him, and I know Jericho had a decent promo leading up to this, but Adam, like, where's the story? Where's the center? Where's the stake? Again, 50-year-old Jericho with a big name, not enough to win your first championship, and this is where something you said last week makes a lot of sense. I want to invert the pay-per-views and have what happened at Double or Nothing happen this, and I kind of want Jericho to have beaten Omega, so it mattered more. Instead, this felt like a junior title, him winning it in the way he did, it just didn't work. It didn't work for the platform it was given, and it sucks because that's your go-home moment. And that's where it's leaving us right now, opening this show for so many minutes, kind of whining and complaining. And for anybody out there going, oh, look, you guys will just, you're just complaining about everything. Well, no, we're not, because we put over what works and we've tasted the steak. We know how great it can be in NXT and NJPW. I wanted this American rival to WWE to be different, and it's just not right now. The only way it's different than WWE is it feels indie. This felt indie. Even with Chris Jericho, this felt indie. How the hell did you let that happen?
Plenty of production problems too that we're not even going to kind of go into. I'm going to put over a couple things on this show, but nothing that we've talked about so far, and for really good reason. You know, we're allowed to be disappointed at stuff. We tell you when WWE disappoints us, which over the last, 18 months has been more frequently than it hasn't. But we also tell you when it really pops us, and we're going to talk about WWE popping us today. And you know, there's a couple things from AEW that I will take away as positive. But before we get into the rest of the matches, Brian, it was breaking news last night and now into today. Chris Jericho. I mean, it's incredible. Chris Jericho leaves with the AEW World Championship, first ever championship, legitimately takes his limousine to, I don't know why I said limousine, to Longhorn Steakhouse, and the championship gets robbed, stolen from him. Now, Wednesday morning when we're taping the show, the Tallahassee Police Department has recovered the title and all is right in the world. How ridiculous is this? I mean, every part of it, them losing the title, Jericho taking a limo to a Longhorn Steakhouse. No hate Longhorn, but like, you don't take a limo to a Longhorn Steakhouse. Like, what's going on here?
Well, there is a growing population in the last couple hours online who are wondering if this whole thing's a work and they got the police involved. Either way, it's a massive fail.
A false police report, if you do that.
No one's seen a police report yet.
Yeah, it's been posted online.
Not the report.
Yeah.
Oh, you've actually seen the, okay, I was short of that,
today. You know,
people were sort of wondering until we see proof of this. Either way, look, it's a bad look. And for someone like you, Adam, who's gone on record publicly and said AEW's just not for me. So when they have a show that underachieves to this level and allows us to open with the main event and on our biggest top of the week and sort of just take a giant doogie on them, which they kind of deserve, something like this happening with the belt is just, it's just minor league, dude. It's just an extension, and it gives you the fuel to just LOL on top of them. I mean, what else am I going to say? This looks awful. Even the way that they've gone to laugh with it and cover it up and have Jericho cut a promo from the hot tub. I'm not out on All In. And wait, no, it's actually not called All In. It's called AEW. I'm not all out on AEW. But man, this extending all the way to losing the title, it just don't feel... Did I have expectations too high for it? I don't think so, because I saw Double or Nothing. I saw the potential of when you mix some in their prime ex-WWE names with a legend, with a group of the best and most progressive wrestlers in the world, between the Young Bucks and Omega, and the potential we thought of maybe using NJPW, which doesn't seem to be possible. I thought they could take over the world. I thought this could be a revolution to make WWE better. We may still get to the make WWE better part, by the way.
It already is. It already has.
But I want, at least for a season, to feel like there's a WCW back in my life. And what I need dialogue. I actually need some war. I need some anti-WWE slander. I need some feeling like they're doing something different. Watch us, because we're better and we're different in these ways. You got to get back to that. You got to get there.
It's not our fault, because they set the expectations. They said, this is what we're going to be. We're going to be better. They had Tony Khan come out after Double or Nothing and say, I think this is the greatest pay-per-view I've ever seen, which even if you loved Double or Nothing, it wasn't. I mean, it didn't come close to that, right? And then you have them coming out after this and saying, yeah, this was great. It's everything we wanted. You know, even though Moxley wasn't here, everything else went, you know, exactly as planned. And it's like, if that went as planned, you got some problems. I mean, the best thing I saw, honestly, truly, on All Out was afterwards, and I didn't even see it until the next day, Hangman was doing a press scrum still in his tights on a platform standing above reporters. So reporters were looking directly at his crotch. And he's doing the scrum, and he's depressed and whatever. And Pac comes out and starts trash-talking him because they never got their
– it was part of their post-show, which is still available for free on Bleacher Report app. And it has also the Jericho post-champagne celebration by himself. Yeah. Which was good, by the way.
Both of those were great. And I was like, you know what? That's really entertaining to me. And I have no doubt that a lot of their TV show will be stuff like that. And that's really good. And I accept that and I appreciate that. But when you go back to the in-ring product and the stories that they're telling us on the extremely long show that they made us watch, when we talk about WWE length, this was just as bad. You have to deliver when you're telling us that we're better than them. And Brian, you know, you want the WWE trash talk and all that. When they do that is when they're panicking, when their ratings aren't as high as they should be. It's exactly what Vince did with the billionaire Ted stuff and the fake Razor and the fake Diesel. He panicked. And that's when he went directly after WCW. And yeah, you can talk about like the DX invasion, but that was actually good, right? It was the bad, like talking crap about WCW just to do it because we're scared. That when AEW starts doing that, which they already kind of have with the throne and some of that other stuff, but when they start doing that on TV, that's when they're panicking.
Yeah, and there's going to need to be more quality control. It's not like they lack veterans in the creative side of this. They brought in some producers from WWE. They got guys with legitimate credentials. But when you have your lead wrestlers that are also big backstage shares as executive producers and vice presidents and all that, I mean, look, everybody seems to want a little bit of everything. It's Omega pushing the Joshi. It's this and it's that. I mean, I just saw too many things on the show that doesn't belong there. I'm almost to the point where I'm saying their entire women's division doesn't belong there unless they can work up a feud that we have to see or unless someone like Britt Baker is giving us really good matches. But that's not going to work. I really liked the triple threat weapons match. I think it's something different. I think it plays on some of the extreme value of old, but with new characters that I'm invested in between Janela, Allen, and Jimmy Havoc, who I knew really nothing about coming in. Same thing with the opening six-man tag match. You know, the Jurassic Express felt and looked fresh. It felt like something different. That's a positive sign. SoCal Uncensored is really doing a poor man's 3MB, a cooler 3MB, actually a rich man's 3MB if you're really being honest. But I'm saying stuff like that, fine. Even the further potential that we can get out of something like Angelico and Jack Evans, it's going to be fun to watch. Fine. Loved it. Pac Omega, great work. I don't need Dark Order and Best Friends going anywhere beyond 4 minutes. I don't need Joshi. Cody and Spears was good for what it was. I don't get the psychology of Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard now feuding. I don't get it. That wasn't explained.
After crapping on me last week.
And I'm going to crap on the booking now. I don't get it. Why would that make any sense?
Because his partner, just because they were former partners, and even if they feuded with Dusty, they all come from the same era, right? So they're supposed to be aligned. And they're supposed to be aligned really behind Cody and the generation that brought Cody up, which is Dusty, right? So then they have Tully, who's going out of his way to crap all over Cody by helping this outsider in Sean Spears, and Arn Anderson isn't going to take that. So he comes in, gets the spine buster. It was a huge pop.
It was a hot
moment. I loved the spine buster. It was great.
Oh, and it was a hot moment, but it's just some of that psychology I didn't get. But I'm not going to crap on that match. It was good. It wasn't great. It was good. It was good. What it needed to be. And then you had that tag match. The tag match was freaking outstanding. Was it a spot fest? I know you don't get it. It's not for you. That's fine, Adam.
I get it. There's a difference between getting it and not liking it.
It's not for you. It was insanity. It was top level insanity. Yes, they're spot guys. All four of those are spot guys. That's a spot style match, but it's an elite, extreme, perfection spot style match. Yeah, the psychology's out the window to a certain degree on when to go for the win and stuff like that.
Didn't exist.
But you want to just talk about entertainment? That's five-star entertainment right there. Five-star entertainment. It was a spectacle, and I don't want to agree with Meltzer, who was arguing on Twitter that after a match that good, you can't put your world title on last, because I'm torn on that. You have to present your world title as the most important thing. But yet I'm going to sit here and argue that at WrestleMania 18, Rock and Hogan should have went on last. That at WrestleMania 24, Flair and Michaels should have went on last because it was bigger stars and a better story. And in those spots, you can't argue it because of the star power there. But in this case, making those two matches after each other, it's like that tag match being so good hurt them because it completely overshadowed the main event and reminded you how boring that slugfest main event turned out to be. And you can't have your end of the show go in the negative downhill direction. You yeah. have to be peaking and leading towards something big. Overall, it was a failure from the mission. But if you rearrange some of these matches, there was a lot to like on this card. So that's why I'm not here to tell you the sky's falling. I'm here to tell you the pressure is on them because, Adam, the window is going to be small. When they go live October, what is it, second, they're going to have 1 week, maybe two, for the wrestling fans that are full-time wrestling fans but WWE fans to check out what's going on over there. For the casuals, for the lapsed WCW fans, they're going to have even less. They may only have 30 minutes on the first episode or one click to the channel. So they're going to have to bring it. And I hope that they don't panic bring it, which is to go back to let's put 50 reveals in an episode instead of, you know, two or three and have really good storytelling around it. But it's going to be interesting. I want to play one DM for you that does sum up what I feel. What do you have, Adam? You got something
for
me.
Go for it.
Kentucky Long Rifle. What is that, an email?
You know, it is an email. Adam, have you ever heard of Lil Nate at MT Stewart 4? Family member or newcomer here?
Definitely not. That is a new voice to the State of Combat universe.
Yeah, I don't think I know this man. I know him now, though. First, I just got to say the evolution of this podcast has been a fun ride to be part of. And when it comes to pro wrestling, it's the number one podcast I look forward to listening to every single week. Adam, I think he just joined the family.
Absolutely. And he's accurate. Very smart.
This weekend was loaded with great wrestling content, but we got to have an honest discussion about AEW. Hey, Lil Nate, we just did, all right? Back to the script. This TV deal is in trouble before it begins. Fans are failing to realize that what keeps a TV show afloat is appealing to casual fans as well as your main focused audience. I watched All Out with a couple of casuals, and their reaction was very telling. They couldn't get past the commentary to enjoy the show. They kept asking why JR hates this product so much. I know the wrestling community wants to give him a pass, but at some point TV execs are going to have an issue with someone constantly bad-mouthing the product. The matches looked like they were booked in a smart order, but the audience was burned out by the main event. Whether it was length of time or order of matches, everyone checked out by the end. He goes on to list specifics, but he sort of gets in the end. Is he a pessimist? Yes, but that's because I was a ECW and ECW fan over WWE in the 90s, which, by the way, MT Stewart 4, so was I.
I was too.
And he says, I had to watch both companies fold. I want AEW to have a real chance to compete. But right now, every brand in WWE and even Impact is putting on better shows. They have to step up their game. Adam, I read that. Because he's speaking basically that part of my heart, that I don't want to see AEW end before it begins. I want to have a season. They're not going to compete most likely commercially, certainly not financially. Maybe they'll have a hot stretch of ratings, maybe. But at the very least, I want them to compete critically, where when we go to put this show together, we go, well, we got to have part of the main event be about AEW. Holy crap, did you see that feud, that angle, that episode? Don't break my heart before I even get a chance, right?
Yeah.
I want to bang, right? I want to buy you dinner. I want to do some things, right? I want to waste money on you. I want to buy you a necklace or something. Don't break my heart now. Lead me on for a while. You know, here's the thing. They're going to break our heart in the end. It's not a sustainable model, right? Wrestling boom is going to end. Dave Meltzer's rag, which I stumbled into the other day, I had too much time on my hands, kind of broke down intelligently. That this is either going to be the third boom period or it's going to dilute the product so quickly with NXT on TV, AEW in your face, 5 hours of regular WWE content, not counting pay-per-views for everybody. Somebody's going to be right. But in the end, AEW probably not going to be here in 5 years. but don't end it after 6 months. Give me a reason to stay here, or I'll turn right back around.
Yeah, you're right. And I do think there were reasons, and there were moments in that card that did get me, that I liked. And I don't want to come off here, like you said at the, you said in the middle of this show, you said something along the lines of, it's not for me. And it's not for me, but not preconceived. Because after All Out, I had people messaging me on Twitter saying, you know, why do people like this? Like, why are people loving this show so much? Why are they praising it online? And I'm like, my answer was, I don't know. This, as of right now, is not for me. I am a WWE watcher and viewer and an NXT aficionado, and I love New Japan Pro Wrestling. But AEW is something I'm watching more than anything for this podcast, for you, and because as a wrestling fan, I like to be knowledgeable about everything that's out there. And this is a major American professional wrestling promotion to the level that Impact and Ring of Honor, despite trying to be, really are not. So just like you, very briefly, I want to run through this card because you just did and just give you quick thoughts on these matches. I already talked about the women's match. My biggest issue is that AEW has Britt Baker, their top woman, and Kenny Omega, their top man, nowhere near their respective title pictures as they're launching the show. That makes zero sense to me. The Private Party match, really good. I think those guys are extremely talented. They're not as good as the Street Profits. And the comparison is easy. Just because of Mark Quinn and Montez Ford. They're so similar in terms of their athleticism and talent. The SoCal match against Jurassic Express. Like, how is no one making fun of the name Jurassic Express? If WWE did, it's the Viking experience. It's the same name. Well, but people are just giving it a pass.
Well, no. If WWE had a guy look that cool with the combination of size, tats, and a mask, mixed with Luke Perry's son, who looks pretty cool and could do things, mixed with a small guy who can work like that, I think you would instantly love it because it's cool, rather than taking something like the Viking Raiders, which used to be cool, and WWE-ifying it. Difference.
Yeah, but taking Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, which were good, adding Marco Stunt, which is unnecessary, having them be the hottest, truly, besides maybe Moxley, the hottest act in the company, and having them lose to SCU, and then calling them the Jurassic Express, and not even getting the name right on the announcement compared to the graphic on your screen when they called it a boy, and a dinosaur. I mean, it was so amateurish. I didn't like it. Pac Omega, I thought, was by far the best match on the card. Probably it ended right when it should have been in New Japan. It would have picked up for the final 5 minutes and gone on and been a 5-star match. I didn't think it was a 5-star match for me. It was fine. It was very good. 4.5 stars, I guess, whatever you want to call it. Didn't understand the booking either, but I guess they'll give us that. The hardcore match, triple threat, hardcore for hardcore. I like Darby Allin far more in his match against Cody than in any of the hardcore matches he's done, but they keep shoving him into this role with Jimmy Havoc and Joey Janela, so whatever. The Dark Order is horrible. It's maybe bottom five gimmick of all time. I don't even, like, it's, I get it, but it sucks. Best Friends, I never have cared about, still don't. Orange Cassidy, to me, is the opposite of what AEW says they're about, which is competition. This is a guy who is all about being nonchalant and lazy, and it doesn't really make any sense.
Oh, his spot was great.
His spot was great, but him as a character for what they're saying is important to them, which is athleticism and making it be real.
Well, he's new, though. I'm going to give him that pass. He's fresh and unique and new. They're at least playing the new card on that. That doesn't look like cheesy indie to me. That looks like somebody trying to be something we've never seen before.
No, and I will agree with that. I'm just saying in terms of what they told us their product is going to be, his character isn't really – doesn't fit really. But, okay, I'll give him a chance.
I had a lot of people sliding in saying, I don't get the hate for All Out online. I was at the show – and it ruled. So and you're seeing that with the fan response. They're capturing the in-arena experience well and sending people home happy. And that's good. That's good. That's a good foundation to have.
From the start, it is a fan. I'm not going to do the whole rant again, but it is a fan-driven company, right? Their whole marketing pitch around this company is we are for you. We're by you and for you when they're actually not there by the wrestlers. But still, that's what they say, right? And the fans in the arena, credit to them, they are diehard AEW fans. They have found this fan base. And the question is, can they expand it? But because of that, in arena, and even watching on TV, you hear these fans go crazy for like a German suplex or a boot to the face. And you're like, what? Why are they flipping out over this? It's fine. And the show seems better than it is to the viewer at home, in my opinion, because the fans are so great. Whereas with WWE TV, many times, talk about the Lafayette crowd, they undersell how good the in-ring product is because they don't get as excited for it. Anyway, women's match we talked about, Cody, Shawn Spears, I fully enjoyed it. Maybe it's because it was very WWE booking for me, but I enjoyed it. I thought Tully was great. I thought MJF was great in there. That was great. And last, the tag team match. Look, Brian, you said your piece on it. I won't go long, but here's the thing. For the same reasons I didn't love Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano 3 are the same reasons I didn't love this match. The fact that Meltzer criticized Gargano Cole the same way I did and is not criticizing Lucha Bros Young Bucks for the same reason is shocking to me. It was completely overdone, and this was worse, actually. This tag team match was worse than Cole Gargano. It was completely overdone, over-choreographed. The fact that they had two different segments in that match where opposing players were doing the same moves on the other partners, I mean, it boggled my mind. You had Nick Jackson or Matt Jackson, I forgot who, take a Canadian destroyer on a ladder, 30 seconds later stand up and do a move off a ladder. Brian,
it's that style, Adam.
That's gymnastics.
So what I said was in that style, which is a big part of the indie scene, Mexico scene, they're not selling big moves. It is a big move spot fest. So within the storyline, it actually made sense for them to stare across the ladder at each other and go, I'm going to do this move. I'm going to do it better than you on your teammate. That
double
stuff is fine.
Double dive in the ring next to each other.
Right, it's not for you, but within that genre of what it was, just like the Mox and Janela weapons match, it was pretty damn great for what it was in that genre. In the genre of what it was, this was a 5-star match.
That came nowhere near 5 stars as a match, and it didn't come close.
You're not listening to what I'm saying.
I am listening to what
you're saying. In the genre of the style of match that it was a 5-star match.
No, it wasn't. Are you saying the genre is the same as a WWE TLC match, for example? Like, the triple threat Dudley's Edge and Christian?
No, what I just said, using both the indie style and the Mexican style of not playing to the storyline as much and being more about, can you top this, not selling spot after spot. I'm going to do an even more dangerous spot than the one I just did a minute ago. It was perfection. That match was insanely good.
So a match without selling, without really good storylines, is
right.
A 5-star match
in
because
the
genre
of what it is, Adam. I don't get how you don't get this.
I'm going to go Jim Cornette then. That's not wrestling. A match without storylines or selling is not wrestling.
Okay, you're not understanding English. In the genre of what it was, which is a non-selling spot fest, it was a 5-star match within that genre. Why are we wasting this time here?
Maybe it was that genre.
It's not for you. You tweeted it. Most of AEW's not for you.
That's not true. Most of AEW should be for me. It's just not very good.
You tweeted it. It's not for you.
Yeah, what they are currently delivering is not working for me, correct.
But even when they're really good, I don't know if it's for you.
No, if it's good, then it's for me, yeah.
I
love Cody Dustin because I didn't give it 5 stars like you did. It's not for me. That's not true.
I don't think it's your style in the end. I think you can still get entertainment out of it, but it's not for you. I think you nailed it when you tweeted that out.
This match, what you're telling me is, this match is indie Mexican style, all this stuff. Okay, it didn't have selling. It didn't have a really good storyline. To me, forget whether it's 5 stars
the
or not
genre.
For that style.
Okay.
Right. Forget whether or not it's 5 stars or not for that style. It's not wrestling. I'm going to go Cornette here and agree with him. It's not wrestling.
All right. Have you ever seen
geography? It's gymnastics.
The early 3-match series between Ricochet and, what's his name? Osprey on the Indies when they, 3 years ago when they first caused a lot of mayhem.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what it is. It pisses off the old guys. It's just full on choreography, but
this was so far beyond
athleticism.
That.
And within that genre of what that match was, it was insanely good. Just like within the genre of what this ridiculous tables and ladder match was, they nailed it. It was full on in your face entertainment from start to finish.
Those are so not even comparable because this was so far beyond that in terms of ridiculousness that you can love it. You can call it a 5-star match based on that style, but compared to 5-star wrestling matches, it was not one. It's just not.
Right, because I said within that style, it's 5 stars.
Fine. Enjoy that.
Okay, but that's what I said 5 minutes ago. I don't get how you don't get that.
I understand. What I'm arguing about the style of match, not whether you're calling it five stars or not. I'm saying that style sucks. I'm saying that
right,
style
it's
is
not
barely
for you. Popular. We've already established this. Most of what you're going to see in AEW is not for you. You tweeted it yourself, Adam.
That's not true. Because
so there's
the
going
style
to be a ceiling for what you're going to enjoy. Like Cody Dustin, you didn't hear it. Jimmy played through the stereo. You listened.
That's such a crap thing for you to say. Saying I don't hear something because I don't like it as much as you. It's so ridiculous and pandering.
You said it was good.
Handful of people that love you so much on this podcast that they'll retweet a picture of a hedger, you know, an electric hedger that you send out. Okay,
that was dynamic.
That's you. It's you pandering to them. In fact, it's a legitimate opinion, Brian, to say that I really like the Cody Dustin match, but I just didn't love it because to me it was so much blood and guts and gore that it took away from the actual quality. That's a legitimate opinion to have. That doesn't mean it's not for me. Jericho, Hangman Page, that style of match, Omega, Pac, the tag team matches, both of them, the men's ones on that show, those are all for me. Okay?
Right, but you didn't hear the blood in that match.
But the matches didn't live up to expectations.
The blood is, the blood added to the drama and intensity of storytelling and actually fueled it. And you missed it, and that's fine. In the end, it wasn't for you.
I didn't miss it, Brian. It was in front of my eyes.
Just like this tag team ladder match, I don't think it was for you. And that's fine. There's different styles.
It's very, very simple. I see it all. I didn't like it.
I can hear Jimmy. No, I can hear Jimmy.
It's not everything's for everybody.
I don't think you realize you're Billy in that, but you are. You think you can hear Jimmy, but you don't know what Jimmy actually is.
Wow. Well, we had a good show. We had a good run, folks.
Okay, let's talk about Brian. Let's move on, and let's talk about something that I know we'll agree on. At least I hope. I haven't actually got your opinion on this yet. We're talking so much about All Out, but to me and to a lot of people that messaged me and that I was reading on Reddit and other places, NXT UK TakeOver Cardiff, same day, a few hours earlier, whether it was booked to take away from that or the NJPW Royal Quest show, you know, whatever you believe whatever you want to believe. But Brian, that freaking show delivered. It was better top to bottom. The best matches were better than the best matches on All Out. I know you saw Walter Tyler Bate. I know you saw the triple threat tag team match. Tell me what you thought of those matches, and I really hope that those matches are going to get you to watch the rest of the show.
I doubt I'll watch the rest of the show, but I'll say this. Those two matches made me lament the amount of wrestling out there because from the video packages leading into the matches to the gritty style shown, it's a combination of what we love from NXT, which is, by the way, a perfect combination of what was old mixed with what is new, and then you add in that European style and that European build. It made me wish I could watch that as a weekly show. I know I could. I don't want to. I don't have the time to.
That's not what the weekly show is. It's not that good.
But it made me want to be aware of what that product is. It was really good wrestling. The lights were dimmed in that NXT style. It was about what was going on in that ring. Look, that tag team match that I did see with the three teams, it was like a symphony in the fact that they knew how to play the crowd. You know, it was very reminiscent of how great that Mustache Mountain regular TV tag team match was against, who were they?
Undisputed Era.
In that same way. I mean, they're just playing with your emotions. And let's talk about that Walter Tyler Bate match. Let's talk about how great Tyler Bate is, and we never talk about how great he is. I mean, I think we realize how great Pete Dunne is, and they had that amazing series with that one specific match that was a legitimately all-time great match. Bate is so damn good, and this is like the perfect type of setting and arena for him not to look too small. And they played his lack of stature into this storyline of this match, this 40 frickin' minute match that it was so damn old school. It was so about, it was a physical fight. This match was a fight, yet it was like a movie because there were so many peaks and valleys of emotional turns as a fan where you're like, okay, he's the small man getting beat by the Goliath, but he's working his way back up. But then he gets close and he gets stumped again. He gets close, he gets stumped again. And there was the perfect amount of sort of holy crap spot moments, including that reverse brainbuster on the apron that I was just like holding my head watching. It got us there. It got me there. I didn't think it was five stars in the end. I thought it was a great match. I didn't like the somewhat abrupt ending, but it almost had to have a somewhat abrupt ending because the story was bait trying to get over that mountain. And if he wasn't going to be booked to win it, then I guess you really can't have a breakthrough victory for Walter there. It's got to just be one more lariat. You're done. Thanks for coming. But these two guys bought into that system that I think NXT, the formula is been cooked by Trips now long enough that people know it. And it's just, what I'm trying to say is this. Those two guys are different, Bate and Walter, and they're very good. But they exceeded in a sum of their parts type of match. They made a match that was better than both of them, I think, in individually, because of the commitment to what the NXT product is. I mean, that match could be in a darkly lit North Carolina gym in 1986 with the kind of style and of the storytelling, yet it had 2019 physicality and moves in it. Damn, if that's what NXT UK is, Adam, then I wish the proper distribution of the wrestling that we see and have easy access to in the States was different. We always say we wish NJPW had a weekly show with the type of access that we have for WWE because that deserves it. That might deserve to be our number one. And then a lot of times we say, you know what? NXT's so great. If that's our number one and Raw and SmackDown's our side piece, that's more than fine. I almost might need NXT UK to be a part of my life after the feels I got from this match.
It's tough because the NXT UK TV product, it is not bad. Some people really don't like it. But it's not that. Just like takeovers aren't the weekly product, but the weekly product is still really, really strong for regular NXT. I'm not going to tell you that if you loved that, you should now watch their TV every week because you're not necessarily getting those matches to that level. Now, that's not to say you're not going to get a Walter match or a Tyler Bate match. You're just not going to get a 40-minute epic. And not to go back to the previous argument, but you want to talk about not hearing Jimmy. If you don't think that was a 5-star or 5.5-star match, I don't know what you're smoking, but
I'll get 4.5.
That was a 5-plus star match for me. 5 and a quarter, 5.5. It was perfect. There, a big man, small man match like that. And you're talking about the arena not, you know, hurting Bate in terms of stature. He was going up against the biggest guy in the company and he did look small, but he looked mighty. And you want to talk about the AEW crowd supporting AEW. The NXT UK crowd, the British wrestling fans, the way they put Bate over, that's how you put someone over even in a losing effort. That's what the AEW crowd, by the time they got to the Jericho Hangman Page match, couldn't give a crap really who won because they were so exhausted, right? Well, this was a long show too. Not as long, obviously, because it's a takeover, but there was a lot of things that happened. There was a last man standing match that was outstanding between, I believe, Joe Coffey and Dave Mastiff that you're talking about not wanting to go back and watch. Brian, you need to at least go back and watch this. The women's match got a little played by some people as not being great. It was good to me. I thought it was fine. But this match in particular really rang the bell. And for this to be on the same card as Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster, guys from Wales, winning the NXT UK tag team titles in Cardiff, beating Gibson and Drake and Gallus. That was, I mean, 4.75 stars, maybe 5 stars for a tag team match. Those were two incredible bouts to be on the same show. When you take those all together, the three I just mentioned with the last man standing, the fact that Cesaro shows up and puts on a match with this Dragunov guy, who I don't even particularly like, that had the place rocking. This show, top to bottom, straight up, was better than AEW All Out. And when you consider that this is WWE's fourth brand, and it's not even coming anywhere near American television, that says to me that they know what they're doing, and AEW is still very much figuring it out.
Yeah, that is ultimately AEW's biggest problem, that they don't know what they are. They're trying to be too much of everything for everyone. You can only be everything for everyone when you have a roster as deep as WWE main roster. That's the only time you can even attempt that. So it's weird. Not every kind of wrestling and every style is for everyone. There are some cornets out there in the world. Hey, Adam, there are people that don't enjoy the bliss, and now I'm not talking about Alexa, of sitting down in a hot tub after a long day's work. But there are things that we know we love, and I love when a wrestling match looks like a fight. That's why I can't stop talking about Japan. Meltzer may like it more because of the seven-star theatrics. I love it more because it looks like a damn fight. It looks like MMA. This match was as close as I thought a WWE product came to that. Even though NXT goes near that a lot, it's still a little bit different formula and flavor from what makes NJPW good. This NXT UK TakeOver Cardiff main event felt like European-Japanese wrestling.
Yeah, it was one guy beating the hell out of another guy and the other guy somehow still being there to survive.
I mean, the juice they put into Bate reversing him into a suplex, which he tried over and over and over again. Then he finally gets it and the crowd is just like going insane on a suplex. That's how you know you're telling stories.
Yeah. And let's not forget that Walter. I mean, we're talking about just Walter being big. He's also insanely athletic. And you talk about Keith Lee over at regular NXT and Dijakovic. I hate saying that name. It like pains me actually when I say it, but those guys over in regular NXT being insanely athletic, this is an Austrian monster, you know, in Walter here who, you know, people over there and hardcore indie wrestling fans know this guy is great, right? And WWE signing him actually pissed people off because they were like, oh man, we're not going to be able to see Walter X place, Y place, Z place, right? But WWE made the smartest move that they ever did. They said, look, he wanted to sign. His thing was, I don't want to leave Europe. I don't want to go on tours on Raw and SmackDown and do this. This isn't what I want. They said, you know what? Fine. We'll pay you the money we were going to pay you anyway. Just be the face of NXT UK. He's dominating. I want to give a very quick shout out to Vic Joseph and Nigel McGuinness.
Yes.
You want to talk about the commentary problems on AEW? Those two together are fantastic. Nigel is maybe the best color guy that WWE has right now. And Vic is pretty quickly becoming my favorite play-by-play
Vic's
man.
Sorry.
Not counting Mauro Ranallo, right. My fault. Number two tomorrow. Vic Joseph is quickly becoming number two.
His default chops, the basic of what makes Vic good, which is calling a match, right? F the storyline. Just call the damn match. He's really damn good at it. But this was a 5.5-star announcing performance from Nigel McGuinness in the main event match. Like it was,
yeah.
Next level. There were some elements of Mauro in there. I felt like he like rubbed off from working with him. Like he really, really nailed that. It made me almost want him on the main roster, but calling NXT style matches, not, you know, calling matches in an NXT style, not main event. And by the way, with Walter, he's so damn good and sells himself that there's almost this knee jerk to say, man, imagine like he's kind of ready for main roster, but not to always harp on that one note of Vince will ruin your character. I mean, he'd be a combination of like Rusev and,
Samoa Joe. He'd have him get beat consistently.
He would come off looking like a combination of like Vladimir Kozlov and like, Snitsky or something. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like
he would be German instead of Austrian on the main roster.
Right. And there would be some way to comically play down the legitimate toughness of what he brings. Whereas it maybe eventually graduate to main NXT and become a headliner. That'd be fine, but stay in high school, Billy. Stay in that Trips run environment, please. Do you think Trips oversees NXT UK, right? Like his influence is definitely running through everything they do?
I think they have their own bookers and things like that, but I think he is in charge of creative, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Two really quick AEW things I forgot to mention before we move on. And guys, we are going to talk, and girls, we're going to talk plenty of WWE on this show, but we had to get this all out of the way. Two really quick things. One, did you see the AEW on TNT like countdown show that they aired Friday night? It was like an hour long. Did you happen to see that?
Not only did I not see it, I was not aware it existed, which is not a good thing because I'm your target audience.
So how about this? You weren't aware it existed. It went on late Friday night. It did 390,000 viewers.
Damn, that's
yeah,
that's not bad, right?
That's good.
Yeah,
basically unannounced, very little promotion. Friday night, 390,000 viewers. And that, you know what that kind of tells me too? Maybe AEW is the one trying to counter program WWE. Maybe ahead of their four big pay-per-views every year, they're going to put one of these shows on Friday night from 8 to 10. What do you think about that?
Wow. Wow.
Or maybe 1 hour, 9 to 10, let's say. Something like that.
Hey AEW, you're going to wear out the StarCast formula, by the way.
That was the next topic I was going to get to.
Real quick.
So StarCast 4, the same weekend as what is being called AEW Full Gear, which, yes, I understand the connotation along with Hangman Page Full Gear Challenge on being the elite. But Brian, you want to talk about Stomping Grounds being a bad pay-per-view name?
Oh, Full, dude, Full Gear's way
Full
better.
Full Gear's an awful pay-per-view
name.
No,
it's actually not. I'm not going to sit here and defend it as being awesome, but it's tongue-in-cheek. It's cool. It feels like an 80s Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, like Commando or Raw Deal. It's not, I mean, to try to compare it to Stomping Grounds, like...
It's Stomping Grounds is better than Full Gear is. Well, what do you think about? But what do you think about Brian?
You are predisposed to hate stuff like that.
No, I'm not. I like Double or Nothing name. I like the All Out name. Those are cool. I even liked Firefest as a name. Those are all fine. This is a terrible name. What do you think about this? Starcast is not affiliated with AEW yet. Now we are holding four, and they just happen to be the same weekend as all AEW events.
I mean, do they do that to keep WWE guys legends able to come on?
Yeah, that's why they say they're not affiliated, right. But they host panels and, you know.
They do, but they don't own the brand. I mean, here's the deal. They don't own the brand name of StarCast. That's a Conrad Thompson production.
Sure, sure.
And so it probably makes sense for Conrad to keep putting that out there since he does podcasts with WWE employees that make a lot of money for them individually.
Yeah, I'm just saying something's going to come to a head when – how is it that every StarCast just so happens to be on an AEW weekend? Why isn't this StarCast on
legality?
Full weekend.
I mean, it's sort of like no one's lying, no one's pretending that it's not that people can't see through it, but that's the way to skirt it.
No, I understand that. It's just it's funny that they're trying to keep up the charade here when it's very clearly an AEW product that's just not financially owned by them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it helps draw interest to their weekend. They use it as a platform, and I think Conrad's skirting it smartly because he's still. It wouldn't behoove him to get to. It wouldn't behoove him to be getting a war against WWE long term business wise.
I don't think it would either. The other, I would just say though, like the StarCast thing is cool, but if you're going to do it four times a year,
yeah,
it should like, be maybe pick two times a year.
It's sort of the Smark fans WrestleMania access, right? WrestleMania, you
better
go
than
there.
That. I mean, it is better than access,
right? But it's the Smark fan version because you go to WrestleMania All Access. I mean, I'm not saying it's not for Smark fans, but it's very colorful. It's like a museum. It's like you get to meet and get autographs. You go to StarCast, it's more like it's a podcast come to life. Like, you know what I mean? It's really hardcore.
You're hearing real stories, you know, right. You're hearing CM Punk.
So it really in that case, I guess should be once a year to feel special. But if it's a business that can keep cashing in, maybe they'll milk it till it dies.
Make your money. You're right. Make your money. And just speaking of making money, we need to do some of that as well, BC. So let's very briefly hear from our friends and sponsors.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrified. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, BC, we are back. Didn't really throw this off the top of the show, but it is time to talk WWE. And the way that BC and I are going to attack that this week is through a segment that I love. I think he loves. I know you love. Hero. Or Zero. All right, five topics. We try to do lightning round, but, you know, a lot happened in WWE, and we haven't even talked about it yet on this show, so we'll see if that comes to pass. BC, not only was Roman Reigns' attacker revealed last week to be Eric Rowan, and I don't even think we spoke about that enough, but they are going all in with it and had Rowan on Tuesday night turn on Daniel Bryan. Are you enjoying this storyline and the fact they are booking Roman Reigns versus Eric Rowan at Clash of Champions, Hero or Zero?
This has become a flat tire. This has become a massive zero. This has become something that was creative that we developed patience for out of respect that something bigger is happening now. And this has now become something that I want to go away. Everything that happened in that closing SmackDown segment was X-Pac heat. It was get this crap off my screen. No, I won't pop for a Roman Reigns, Eric Rowan, pay-per-view match at Clash of Champions. No, I did not pop for Rowan suddenly having a voice. Look, there's a ceiling, okay? Harper has a higher ceiling. Harper should be something right now that he's not. Rowan has a ceiling. It's a massive dude with a character look, but a look. He's either going to be in Bray Wyatt's court of jesters or perfect muscle for Daniel Bryan. Now he's turning on Daniel Bryan. Like, what the hell kind of convoluted Silver King crap are we seeing right here? No, you've just taken something that could have been good and you ruined it. And I don't have the patience or the want or the care to sit around and hope it gets better. And it was just so weird that Raw this week could be so damn good for all the basic reasons of what we want a Raw to be. And SmackDown to me, storyline wise, and this is the great example of it, just was a failure. I couldn't care less anymore about where this is going. No, I want to be off this train. I've heard people give me theories about what this means and what this is going to lead to, theories that involved the Fiend. I don't even know how you're going to get there. I don't want it.
Yeah, SmackDown has completely fallen back into B-show territory, and I don't get it. We are 1 month away from SmackDown on Fox. What are they doing? Losing Brian James, Road Dogg, as that lead writer coming out of WrestleMania, it has just tanked, and it goes way beyond this. But this is what we're talking about here. So they have now promised a career-changing announcement for Daniel Bryan, blown that after everyone was exceedingly interested about what that was going to be. Then they have this angle with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns where we're like, damn, we're going to get a Daniel Bryan-Roman Reigns match, and Reigns is going to really be over as a face, which he is, by the way. He's getting really good cheers. That's not happening. And we have Eric Rowan turning double heel, I guess, on Daniel Bryan, giving him the claw chokeslam through the table. And that was a good spot. I'll take that. That was cool. But is this all a red herring? Is it really that Bryan just took the bump to kind of make it seem to Roman that he wasn't involved when he really was the mastermind behind the whole thing? And if that is the case, then yes, thank you for using the word. That is convoluted as all hell. And I don't know what your red herring would be because I'm not at all interested in it. Eric Rowan is not believable as a singles monster star. I don't know what this is. I don't know where it's going. The only thing I can tell you is it's not good. There's nothing that WWE has done here that has made me want to tune into SmackDown. And perhaps even worse, there's no surprises in terms of when this storyline is happening. I was joking about it online Tuesday night. Every SmackDown for the last 6 weeks, once you get to like 5 or 6 minutes left in the show, they're rushing out an angle with Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan. And it's almost like old school WWE Raw. Oh my God, folks, we don't know what's going to happen next, but we got to go. We'll see you next week. it's rushed.
That's old school Shivani right there. Tape machines are rolling.
WCW and Jim Ross, but it's rushed and it's worse. It's not good. So this is a massive zero. They're hurting Roman Reigns, not ruining him. They're hurting Daniel Bryan, not ruining him. But more importantly, this is the main storyline on SmackDown, which has completely taken the women's one out of like importance, and even the Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton storyline. It's like that should really matter, but they bungled that at SummerSlam. And the last 3 weeks of Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston has been the exact same thing. So it's not only a zero for this storyline, it's a zero for SmackDown storytelling, and it's a zero for what's happening in the main event picture.
And to stretch out something like Daniel Bryan is coming out because he's going to demand an apology from Roman Reigns. Like, we're past that. We're past where that would be cool. We're so deep. The convolution is you've used Buddy Murphy in big parts of this, and now he's gone and he's disappeared. And even though someone like Chris Nyren, who we love on this show, part of our family beer connoisseur to the stars, can slide in my DMs and connect all this to Bray Wyatt some weird way using Eric Rowan as the bridge, I don't understand that. I don't get. What does that mean for Daniel Bryan? Like, I don't get this.
Daniel Bryan, it's unnecessary.
Is Daniel Bryan face now? You know what? Know what matters? Heel Daniel Bryan against Roman Reigns in a feud. Them one-on-one against each other. Star versus star. That's what matters. So can we get to the end of whoever was driving that car and the weird reveal that when we saw that video, it didn't look like Rowan. It looked more like that weird actor with the sprayed on red beard than Rowan. And if it is that guy, like what the, I don't know. I do know this.
Rowan said Tuesday he drove the car. So they even took out that.
Yeah,
they're like saying that was Rowan. Both were Rowan.
I've heard people, I don't know who to give this credit to. I've heard people slide in my DMs, hit me up, and try to connect this to Liv Morgan. And I don't know if you're following what's going on. She put out a real sort of cryptic video online of her cutting off the pink hair as the hair is falling to the ground. I've heard people link her with Bray Wyatt potentially as being like a female, you know, part of that extended funhouse. Either way, I feel like she's about to do something cool and big, but I don't know if it should be revealed that she drove the car or whatever, but
look, I think we do this all the time. We try to create storylines that are entertaining to us because WWE's failing to do it. And they're not failing everywhere, and we're going to talk very soon about a couple things that are really succeeding in WWE. But this is a complete failure, and I don't know who the hell is writing SmackDown. Apparently Vince every week or every other week is tearing it up 2 hours before it goes live. But when you tear – people misunderstand that when you tear up a show, that doesn't mean you're starting from scratch. It means you're tearing up the order and you're tearing up a couple things that happened, but you're still using many of the same elements. So the shows that we're seeing are still very much what they are. They have been planning to write and put together, but there is something very wrong with SmackDown Creative. And I don't necessarily mind it because Raw has been so good the last 5 or 6 weeks. But the truth is, you're a month away from Fox. And if this is what you're planning to give us on Fox, those ratings are going to tank. And you ain't going to be on Fox long. You'll be on FS1.
I think they got to figure out. And I think we've heard the rumblings that there will be a draft. There will be a brand split again.
According to Meltzer, but I mean, he also said that we're going to get a Rowan Daniel Bryan match at the last paper.
I think they need to figure out what's more valuable to them in that regard. Because just as an example, we're going to get into the whole Bayley stuff in a minute. But what happened Monday night with Bayley fired me the hell up. I wanted to see what happened next. And that just happened to be the next night on SmackDown, where we'll break down whether that segment was good or not, but I was excited to see that. I liked that the storyline was going to make me need to see the next episode. I think that may end up being more valuable. I don't know if you can do that because you're serving two masters in the Fox era where Raw's on NBC Universal, Fox is on SmackDown. There's two different ultimate cooks at the end of the line there, but I think that's valuable overall, the product. When you focus a little more on your top 4 or 5 storylines and spread them across two brands, don't insult us with a wild card. No one needs to wrestle on both shows, but just have those big things. Hey, you can't miss what's coming up on Friday because, you know, that could be better than going back to a draft. But if it comes down to it, that's okay, though.
You're right, Brian. Like, if you want to extend storylines to the other show, that's fine. But there's really no reason. And yes, I know the women's tag team titles are multi-brand just by nature of it. But there's no reason that you need to have Alexa Bliss on both shows every week. There's no reason that Miz needs to be on both shows every week. You have other people, right? But if you want to have Roman Reigns on both shows because he's your top guy, or you want to extend a storyline involving two SmackDown women and two Raw women and have it cross streams a little bit, that's totally acceptable. But you have to do it when it really matters, not just to do it because, oh, Elias gets pops, so we got to put him on Raw also.
Just so you'll know, I don't succumb to public pressure. I could care less what the public wants because, quite frankly, I know what they want better than they do.
Don't ever forget that.
It's all about...
All right, Vince. Don't ever forget that, Adam. All right, Adam. Hero or Zero number 2. That was not the only turn this week, as I just teased. Bayley surprised us all Monday night and turned heel, crushing Becky Lynch with a chair, siding with her, quote, best friend, Sasha Banks. Was this the right move for Bayley and the women's division? And Hero or Zero on how things look after Tuesday compared with what happened to close on Monday?
Hero on Monday, Hero on Tuesday. Man, they went from not booking the women's division coming out of WrestleMania to like the last 3 weeks booking the hell out of the women's division. And yeah, no surprise it has to do with the return of Sasha Banks. And Brian, if this is all about them spinning their wheels with the Lacey Evans stuff, and it just got to such a low level that this now seems like it's so great in comparison, I don't know. But this Bayley turn, you've discussed it, how much of a failure her booking has been on the main roster as a face due to Vince McMahon in particular. it has been such a failure with Bayley. She was an also ran. She's long been the fourth member of the four horsewomen. Even when Becky wasn't winning and Bayley was still the fourth because you never really believed in her on the main roster. This heel turn was fantastic. Her little smile, looking at Sasha. And by the way, before I even continue, Sasha Banks jumpsuit. Yeah. All right, moving on. Bayley's look at Sasha before hitting Becky with the chair, the backstage segment, and we don't really give Charlie Caruso a ton of credit here on this show, but the interview segment with Bayley and Charlie Caruso, where Charlie is asking her questions about every single other person except Bayley herself, was extremely well done. Bayley's ability to give that interview and while looking pissed off but sounding like the happy go-lucky Bayley was great. It all worked so well together. And then Tuesday night, to follow that up with Bayley giving a pretty good explanation, she still needs to find a heel voice in terms of the actual tone, but the promo was solid, the explanation was solid, and having Charlotte Flair come out there and not try to be a white meat baby face, but rather trying to be like her father when Ric Flair would turn face, yet still be Ric Flair and come out and say, look, I am what I am. I never tried to be anything I'm not like you who's pretending you're a heel. I'm just me, like me, love me, or hate me. It now has Flair, Charlotte Flair, in this tweener role that she's best at, where she can be a face or be a heel depending on her competition. You have Bayley as the true Steve Austin level baby face, and you have Sasha Banks and Bayley as the respective heels on their shows. This has been perfect. Shockingly perfect. Hero on Raw, hero on SmackDown, hero for all four of the women involved.
Yes.
Good for WWE. Last but not least, last thing. This should main event Clash of Champions, period.
Well, when you say this, do you mean
Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch?
I agree. The turning of heel coinciding with Sasha just took what was already something that felt so like, why did we wait this long to get Sasha, heel Sasha against the man Becky? Like, this is perfection. And added just so many extra potential cool wrinkles to it. It was a borderline siren moment Monday night when Bayley turned heel. And I was so caught off guard by it because of how poorly they've booked her that it almost played in their favor. Because instead of sitting there going, is she going to turn? Is she going to turn? Looks like she's going to turn. I'm sitting there going, oh God, like, wet blanket Bayley again. Like, how are they going to ruin this? Like, why are they inserting her as SmackDown Women's Champion into the middle of this? And then it just went up a notch. Monster hero. I got to be honest. I was prepared for it to fail on Tuesday. I came in there with high expectations. I sat through Bayley's promo going, it's good. I don't know. But them going back to the well with the chairs and the little tease of, am I going to turn back on you? No, we're going to team up. It reminded me of one thing that we're not praising AEW for, and that's planting the future seeds of the MJF heel turn on Cody. And when MJF picked up that chair in the ring, and by the way, he was freaking fantastic from the backstage to talking trash to DDP and even Brandy of like, get away, I'm the side piece here, to showing you that's a future money feud. I got a little of those feels on Sasha and Bayley on Tuesday night, hitting Charlotte with the chair and them going, you know, yeah, we'll stay together. We'll be friends. Love where this is going. It's tweening a lot of people. And I got some DMs about that. Don't have time to read them, but people are confused. They're upset. A lot of people playing the tweener right now. And Bayley didn't come out as a full on heel on Tuesday, which
she
is
hit
what
Becky Lynch with a chair. She's a heel.
Right. But I'm saying when she teased that she might not be, that she might not know who she is, I get it. I was a little nervous, but I get that there's nuances here because Bayley's not looking at herself as a villain. She's looking at herself as someone who's being loyal to a friend. But I did like what sealed it was she addressed to the crowd. Like, you're confusing me. You know what I mean? Like, why are you suddenly chairing me now? You know what I mean? So in the end, Charlotte's comments really put it over the top. The chair scene got me pitching tents. I'm ready. I'm ready for this. Becky and Sasha matters. Sasha is a five-star zipper effect right now. Thank you.
Truly, that jumpsuit was insane. And I'm also forgetting to give credit to Sasha for her promo earlier in the show, her and Becky had a really good dueling promo segment after the prior 2 weeks of Sasha kind of fell a little flat. Her promos and her explanation for her attacks, she nailed it this week with Becky. That was great. And you talking about MJF really, really briefly, I just want to say something, reminded me of something from AEW that I did not get to criticize, that I very badly wanted to criticize. Stop bringing the dog out. Like, it's enough with Pharaoh. You can't have a dog. My dog, Moose, great dog, gets scared at a lot of stuff. And when he is petrified, his tail goes all the way, basically up his butt, between his legs, curls all the way under because he is scared bleepless and wants to go home. And all I saw with that dog from the moment he got on the entrance ramp, his tail was under his legs. He was scared. That was, it's not animal cruelty, but it was pretty damn close. That traumatized the dog. Pharaoh backstage segments at Cody's home. Show me as much of Pharaoh as you want. He looks like a great dog. Get him away from the ring or the entrance ramp or pyro or anything like that. I had to say it. I'm sorry. Shame on AEW for that.
Yeah,
shame
I
on
think
Cody.
That's over.
Shame on Cody for that and Brandy for that.
Actually, see, here's what you don't realize about your biggest rival, Bob Backlund at TalkBox. The guy, you won't say his name on the air. You refuse to mention his existence. You guys are actually very similar. You're both very skeptical of AEW and you both.
We agree on a lot of stuff. We do.
You both turned on them over this dog thing. I think it's well overplayed. I heard about it before I saw it. I heard people screaming murder and then I saw it. I'm like, all right, he got scared. Like, we've brought Matilda
Ryan,
to the ring.
They kept bringing him down the ramp.
Right.
They dragged him down the ramp.
You guys had me believing that, like, they set off pyro right next to his head. I get why he was afraid. He heard the pyro, but he was part of the entrance. He was part of the, we don't know which one's Cody's going to pick. I know he was scared, but it really wasn't what it was played out to be. And I'm a dog guy. It really wasn't animal cruelty.
Brian, I'm not saying this like you don't know this because you do. So I'm not saying it that way, but dogs' ears are like a million times more sensitive than ours, right? There are wrestlers who don't like walking out to pyro. This is a dog. That is, imagine setting off fireworks in front next to a dog. That's what they did.
Well, they did it while he was still in that backstage area through the tunnel.
I
thought it was well overplayed in the end. I get that.
100 feet away from it and it's still loud.
It turned out to be a bad move for them in the end, having him close enough where it spooked him out. But, I mean, there's people like tweeting at the SPCA. It's like, okay, people like
okay,
relax.
That's taking it too far as well. But you could see while they were walking down the ramp, like Brandy, MJF were like talking. I forgot who was saying it. I think it was MJF. Like, he's like, he's scared. Like, we gotta get him out of here. And they just kept bringing him to the ring. No, once the dog's scared like that, that's time to say, you know what? Brandy walking back, come right back out, meet the guys at the middle of the ramp. Like, that never should have happened.
They tried to calm him down. He had a role to play in that spot. They finished the job. I mean,
Stop with the dog.
Okay, but are you gonna come with that same energy about Vince saying the show must go on after Owen died?
Oh yeah, that show should have ended. Of course it should have. Okay.
I want to make sure we're keeping score here. Thank you.
Does anyone think that show should have kept going?
I don't know where you stand. You blindly
anyone,
back
does
Vince
anyone
all
other
the
than
time.
Maybe like Cornette. Does anyone other than maybe Cornette think that show should have kept going?
I mean, they should have closed down shop on the promotion after that. I mean, that was really, really bad. All right, let's keep this going before we have a 3-hour show.
All right. Third party hero zero. So after being beaten for BC time and time again by Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch respectively, we are now seeing the return to television of Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. Corbin has won 2 King of the Ring matches. Lacey Evans just beat Natalya. Are you buying into the rebuilds of these two as WWE is trying to almost get over their, not that Corbin was an entrance, but their botched entries into the main event scene on their respective divisions?
Yeah, that's fine with me. I don't know if it was that botched. I didn't necessarily need to see a mixed tag team feud at the extreme level of all these 4 people, but I am standing on a platform that I believe in. And that platform says that Lacey Evans is a main eventer. And every time she's in the ring, she shows me that. Every time she's on social media, she shows me that. So her getting rebuilt quickly after, I guess in hindsight, rightfully losing to Becky Lynch, if you're not going to go all in on her, then she can't win in that spot. but get her right back into the title feud. And don't have the smell of Corbin next to her either. So let's go. Let's put her over. She can work. She can work better than people are realizing. She is a future pillar in this women's division because the 2019 era of the women's revolution is all about workers. And even though she's athletic and is big and can work, she's sort of the antithesis of that. She's somebody a little bit different. She plays a character. She plays a monster character. She's fantastic. Yes, big time hero. Continue to put her on my television. Baron Corbin.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, what do you got? What do you got?
No. I didn't realize we're only talking about Lacey.
Baron Corbin, I mean, is not moving me, but, you need a heel like that. All I'm saying is do not put the crown on this man. That's all I'm saying.
So I'm almost exactly the opposite of you because here's the thing. I like Lacey Evans a lot. As a character, but I think wrestling, she's just not very good. I do think she's getting better every time she's in the ring. And I've said that about others like Carmella and there's other women. Mandy Rose is another example who every time we see them, they're better than they were previously. And that's all you can really ask. So I like the reintroduction of her. They're taking it slow. They're having her with Natalya. I'd like to see her against like a Naomi and some of the other women who aren't getting on television for some reason. I would like to see that a little bit more than her immediately going again with Becky or Sasha or whatever the case might be. Regarding Corbin, I've maintained this from the beginning. He is way better than people give him credit for being. I think him losing the TGI Fridays vest and moving almost into the Dean Ambrose attire a little bit has improved his character somehow. He just doesn't look as ridiculous. And I think not calling him Constable and not having him be whining and complaining like he was against Seth Rollins, who's just so outshone him in terms of star power, even though Rollins wasn't great in that feud. Having Corbin work with mid-carders in this way, he does look dominant and beastly, and him going up to the chair and the throne, I should say, and with the crown and all that, it's annoying because you're like, oh my God, they're going to put over Corbin again, but that's the exact response they want you to have. So I love Corbin in the King of the Ring tournament. I think he's doing a really good job. I don't like necessarily that certain people aren't advancing because of him winning, but if you're telling me that the ultimate goal is that he's going to be the heel in the final and that either Chad Gable or I don't even know who else is left on that side is going to go over him. Who is it? It's Chad Gable and Elias. Is that the finals? Okay. So if you're telling me it's going to be Chad Gable versus Baron Corbin in the final and Chad Gable is going to win over Corbin, then I'm all in on it. If you're telling me that he's only there so Ricochet can pin him in the semifinal, I'm all in on that too. The point is, Corbin just can't win the King of the Ring. But anything else they do with him, if they have him win one more match or have him take the fall in the next match, they've done a really, really good job bringing him back, in my opinion.
Yeah, so Lacey Evans is a monster main event. I mean, really, Adam, you, the other people out there, I mean, hear her, see her, feel her, touch her.
She's getting better.
She's great. She's
absolutely.
She's great. She's great. All right. And it's not even I've gotten some mean DMs from people. It's about star power, folks. All right. I know we have female listeners. I want to hear from them. All right. Lacey Evans is a star. The female listeners will tell you, Adam. All right. Okay. Yeah. Regardless of your Yappapai Indian strap thoughts of going one on one with her, regardless of that. Okay.
I have those thoughts with Lacey.
All right. Mr. King of the Ring, SK. This week, we had Samoa Joe and Ricochet fight to a double pinfall in a tournament. Would one advance? Would none advance? No, they will both advance. We also saw Ali lose to Elias and Chad Gable knock out Andrade. Are you liking where we're at with five people, not four, entering next week's King of the Ring semifinals?
So it's tough for me to criticize it because there are people in the semifinals that I like. And not everyone can advance, right? But I kind of want to start. I feel like you owe me a little bit of an apology last week for disagreeing so strongly about my Ali Buddy Murphy take when Ali just went ahead and lost.
No, actually, I was going to kind of basically say the same thing to you. You crapped on the idea of Elias ever being presented as serious, saying that he's already hit his ceiling as essentially a lovable clown who people eventually clown. And you know what he did this week? Was he helped by Ali? 100%. But you know what he did this week? He had a freaking hell of a match. And he got the rub. and he looked great in doing it. And he was physical throughout, and he looked believable in beating a worker like Ali because he sold the physicality the whole match. They made this match matter. They made it feel important. There was intensity. There was physicality. And he lived up to what he had to do and the work that he put in, where he came out looking like a star. And if you can present him as a serious badass, you have a star on your hands. I'm not saying he always has to be that. He's already proven to you that his personality and charisma is so good that he could play the lovable heel loser who everybody runs in on and craps on for seasons. You can go in that direction. But they haven't come close to hitting what this guy's long-term potential is as a believable stud who, when they do turn him babyface, and I know they effed with it a couple months ago, but when they eventually build him up as serious and then turn him face, he's going to be a poor man's The Rock. I didn't say he's going to be The Rock. He's going to be a poor man's The Rock. This guy is a stud, and what he showed you on Tuesday night was that you put him in there with a worker and you'll see how good he actually is. But
this isn't about Elias, though. Yes, I did think Elias had one of his best showcases in terms of in-ring with Ali, which is no surprise because it's Ali, right? But what we talked about, what the argument I made last week was WWE having Buddy Murphy nearly beat Roman Reigns, then actually beat Daniel Bryan, and just having him lose to Ali in a fantastic King of the Ring match. When if they were going to have Ali lose anyway, the thing I said was if they're going to have him win, or if they're going to give him a push, a huge push in the Intercontinental title scene or something like that, then it made sense. But if you were going to have Ali lose anyway, you might as well have continued the build of Buddy Murphy, have him beat Ali, have him be the one who gets hurt against Elias and gets rolled up and pinned. And that's just how it happens. Instead, as a fluke, instead you had Buddy Murphy lose for no good reason because Ali didn't do anything with his victory. That was my concern, and I was 100% right.
No, he lost in a thriller against Ali, two workers who have a history on the cruiserweight level, and then we never had to see him lose again. Now they can actually take him out and build him up where he's supposed to be going. Having him stay another round just to lose to Elias, who you said isn't a main eventer and isn't credible, that would have made this whole situation worse, Adam. Instead, they let Ali take that loss and also let both Ali and our guy, Buddy Murphy, looked like a million bucks because of how great that match was. It's perfectly fine. And plus, it's a tournament.
Then
you can upset people in a tournament. You don't know who's going to win. There has to be let's see what happens when you match this guy with this guy.
I'm not with you on that because they could have continued his momentum. And
what
is that
he gained by pinning Ali and losing to Elias? Nothing. So now they actually did him better because now it's a little bit more in the background of your brain.
Yeah, he wasn't on TV this week, just like Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens weren't on TV this week, although that was a positive. Buddy Murphy not being on TV is a bit of a negative. To keep going on, I did like the triple threat, the double pinfall, even though we've seen that so many times with double countouts and in tournaments or number one contender matches. We see it all the time. I at least liked that it was different. It was a pinfall. More than that, I liked that John Cone got on the headset and they put the audio in there. They had him go backstage. It added a level of realism to it. I thought that was very good. I didn't love that they had that schmoz-ish type of finish. The same show where they had Baron Corbin beat an injured Cedric Alexander who got attacked by the OC for no good reason just because he was a face hanging out backstage. That was kind of weird. And then you have Elias beat Ali who also gets injured. This is all in the same week. It's very similar to each other. It's all these people are advancing without actually winning the matches.
True. We got to get out of the show, though, Adam.
Okay, hold on. And then Chad Gable Andrade comes, and they give us 8 minutes of incredible wrestling that could have been 80, and I would have watched it, and I would have loved it. I love what they're doing with Chad Gable. I think he's going to win the whole thing. Maybe that's what they're wanting me to think. But if they push Chad Gable as King Gable or King Shorty G or whatever name they're going to give him, I don't care. Give it to me. Absolute hero for King of the Ring.
No, I got good news, actually. King Gable would work, and I love their commitment to that storytelling that he's too small and everybody crapping on him. I will say, do I love that a tournament had a tie? No, but the ending between Joe and Ricochet really handled well, especially in the wrestling form of it. Really, everything about it, loved it. Hero across the board, like where this is going. Don't love it, but really like it for the King of the Ring. Just don't crown Corbin. All right, let's close this. We got an interview coming up. Let's close this Heroes.
You do. Yeah, there is a lot of show left, as I like to say. BC, Bray Wyatt debuted a new Firefly Funhouse this week. My opinion, I'll say it off the top, the best one to date. He fed the boss, puppet, money, for all his success as The Fiend and with his t-shirts and stuff. He commented on internet rumors that he was being listed by the venue to main event Hell in a Cell, and he told both Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman that he will see them in hell. BC, are you excited to see Bray Wyatt in a Universal Championship match so soon after debuting as The Fiend? Plus, how great was this, Hero or Zero?
I mean, this may have been the best moment of the week on WWE television, maybe outside of that UK match. It was fantastic. This was their best segment so far, and what they're doing with this. You want to talk about perfectly presenting a character, escalating, bringing out more wrinkles, bringing in Vince, telling him off, but then shoving money down Vince's throat, the devil Vince, to keep him happy. I mean, you know, real Vince was loving that. It's just absolute perfection. Talking about rumors, the tease that he's going to the main event level, the whole, hey, Finn Balor, I'm sorry what the Fiend did to you, but then turning back to the Fiend late, which he's been doing, but every time that happens, I feel like the devil's in the room. Like, it's legitimately scary, and they're nailing this. Monster Hero, don't change. In fact, don't do it every week, but don't change. This is perfect.
It's the best character in professional wrestling in 2019, and it was the best episode of Firefly Funhouse for all the reasons you just said. That's all I need to say. Hero.
Yeah, let's get into our interview. Our guest of the week is the NXT Women's Champion two times. It's Shayna Baszler, former UFC and Women's MMA pioneer, coming at you right now. Enjoy. So pumped up to bring on the NXT Women's Champion, Shayna Baszler. Giant news in the pro wrestling world, of course. NXT moving to the USA Network beginning September 18th, Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 2-hour live shows from here on out. Shayna, great to have you on the show. Great to chat with you. You're a big part of what's going on there. For you in the locker room, what is this move from the WWE Network right in the midst of a congested area on TV with a lot of great stuff happening in pro wrestling mean to you guys?
Well, it's like we've always done. You know, people that have watched NXT, we've always done everything we could to outdo ourselves and put on the best show that we could put together. And I think we've done it time after time after time. What it means to us is that it's just a huge audience that's going to see it now. You know, it's another day for us, but it's exciting that we're suddenly going to be so expanded and everyone's going to see us doing what we've been doing for 5-6 years now.
How much is the idea of competing on the minds of everybody in the NXT locker room? And I don't just mean competing with outside influences and the launch of a rival organization in AEW on Wednesday nights, but the idea of NXT coming off the network, going in front of a larger potential audience. You're competing right there with Raw and SmackDown. What's that like for you guys from the idea of trying to be literally the best brand in the world?
Well, it's exactly like I said. We've always had Raw and SmackDown in mind. You know, that's a thing. It's all a WWE machine, but we have always concentrated. We as NXT have always concentrated on doing our very, very, very to put on the best shows. And that's not me just blowing smoke. You can ask anybody that's watched NXT, however long they have. There's never a person, I think, that's watched NXT, a takeover, or followed a storyline on TV, on the network. I don't think there's anybody that's ever been like, well, I mean, you know, that's never been a thing I've heard. We've always blown people away. One fans that maybe said they've fallen out and they started watching. It's the thing we've always done. And I think, like I said, it's going to be us concentrating on the same things we have, doing the same exact things we have. And now it's on USA. So just a ton more people are going to see it.
Well, I'm excited about that because I've long said that when NXT is at its best, when you're watching an NXT takeover, it's pretty much the best thing going in the world in terms of pro wrestling. So from your opinion, what's the secret sauce? What makes this special compared to anything else out there?
I think there's very much a feeling of helping the person next to you be better. You talk about this spirit of competition, but I think that what people miss in pro wrestling, that what really makes it successful, is that you'll be hard pressed to find anyone in the NXT locker room that's holding anybody down. It's not really a we're in it for ourselves type of thing. We're all helping each other. And if you can elevate the people around you, it's going to elevate the entire product. And it comes out as it does, and you guys are going to see it.
Well, let's talk about your transition. You were a women's mixed martial arts pioneer. We knew your name for years as combat sports fans. And I mean, for all the great credit and deservedly so that your friend Ronda Rousey gets for making her transition, you made it look just as easy. You're just as much a natural. So from your standpoint of being such a great heel and always looking the part of, you know, this is a compliment of evil and of strength, how have you been able to make that transition and make it look like you've been doing this for 20 years?
Well, I do have to give credit to my coaches, Josh Barnett and Billy Robinson. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that I came up in that style of training, I think that I wouldn't have that style to bring to professional wrestling. But, you know, part of it is it's such a cliche thing to say that everything happens for a reason. But I think if I hadn't, it wasn't like I had this plan. You know, I never thought, you know, I'm going to do MMA because eventually I want to pro wrestle. That wasn't a thing I ever thought. I did MMA with the full thought that this was it. I love MMA. I'm going to be the best fighter. This is what I'm going to do. But I think if I had done MMA for any other purpose, I wouldn't be what I am in professional wrestling. You know, getting behind the curtain, waiting to be called out to a ring to face off one-on-one against someone, that's a feeling I'm very familiar with. So it's easy for me to look like I'm familiar with it when I walk through the curtain. And on top of that, you know, you talk about being a heel or whatever. And I think, like, if you follow MMA enough, you're going to know that every fandom and every sport has a certain amount of toxicity. But I think MMA has, like, a special breed of toxicity. And I think just getting numb to that has made me be a certain way in professional wrestling. I don't know a better way to explain it, but I don't care to win fans. I care to tell stories, you know? So it doesn't bother me.
Well, you've been able to transition your physical style so easily, it seems, from the outside looking in. So believable, so tough. Love the submissions, love the toughness. But I was most impressed with how you carry yourself and your swagger. Did it just come easy to you? Is that literally what happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think that inside everyone that does something for a large audience, whether that be, you know, getting on stage and playing a guitar or climbing in a ring to try to fight someone or anything like that, you have a certain amount of swagger inside you. You have to think you're a little bit decent. I don't think there's anyone that climbs into a UFC ring thinking, I do not deserve to be here. This is ridiculous. They get weeded out pretty fast. So I think there's all of, you know, everybody you're going to see doing anything in front of a large audience has a little bit of that in them. And I think the secret to professional wrestling is finding the knob where that lies and just cranking it up to 10. You know, so it's however you need to get there. And I just find a lot to draw from, I guess.
Now, I mentioned your mixed martial arts career. We saw you in all the major promotions. You fought in the UFC at a time when women's MMA was there and it was big, and it is where it is today. But you fought in the sport of MMA going as far back as 2003, where it was probably anything but. Can you give us a story that sort of illustrates where the sport of women's MMA was when you first started to where it is now?
Yeah, I remember. So I was working a job at a like a kid's pizza joint. It was kind of like Chuck E. Cheese. It was called Giggledy's. There was a mascot that was a coyote that rides a tricycle. He delivered your pizza. It was weird. But it was actually a really great job. It was fun. But I remember working a shift and a local promoter, if you even want to call her that, called me. Hey, we have a girl that signed up. So it wasn't even weight classes. It was just like, another girl happened to sign up at the door tonight to fight. Can you get here? And I'm like, yeah, I get off at 9 or whatever it was. I get off at 9. I'll just run home, grab my stuff. I'll be there. And I show up, and this event is like on a property, you know, like a farm property, and it's like cars parked in a circle and headlights turned on for lighting in this cage in the middle. It's like a movie. And you know, no blood work, no weight classes. It, when I look back on it now, it's very, probably very not smart, you know, not regulated. You kind of agreed upon the rules when you got there. Like, should we do kicks to the head when you're down? Yeah, no. Okay, cool. How about this? And you just signed up and this girl outweighed me. And, that was the norm back then, you know? So it's come a long, long way for sure.
Now, for you to be that tough to do that back then, I don't know if you're playing a character on NXT. I think that might be the real you.
Well, the best characters in pro wrestling are the ones you can draw from real life, right?
So. Yeah, that's a great call. Absolutely. You're now the only two-time women's champion in NXT history. Your reign's gone on longer than I thought it would be, because when you first won that championship, you sort of hit so hard that a lot of people are going, oh, wow, you can put her on the main roster tomorrow, and she seems to have that it. How, now with NXT moving to regular television, is it no longer thought of like, hey, this is a AAA, this is a JV, I'm doing my time here, and then I'm going on? Do you have any sort of like goals and dreams to go to Raw and SmackDown, or would you be just as fine in the black and yellow forever?
Well, here's the thing about that. I think for a long time now, we as a part of NXT have always thought of ourselves as equal. It's been a thing that kind of everybody else on the outside has looked at, probably because of, you know, Raw and SmackDown being on TV. But now that, especially now that we're on USA, and everyone's going to see, I think, you know, it's going to be, that thought is going to spread. But as far as, us thinking about going anywhere, I think it's like a critical time right now. I mean, I am the champion of what I believe to be the best women's division in the world. And I've thought that for a while. So it would be a mistake, I think, especially at a critical time right now where we're going to be hitting a far more widespread audience, to be thinking too far ahead of that. You know, we have huge things coming up, and I think that I speak for everyone at NXT right now to say that we have all sights set on NXT on USA.
I love that answer. That gets me fired up. You, longtime friend of Ronda Rousey, training partner, that this friendship had made it into WWE storylines as well. How do you characterize the year that Ronda did on WWE's main roster and for the huge expectations that she came in with? And then sort of just slayed them all. I mean, hit a grand slam. From your perspective going through that with her, what was that like?
You know, you asked me how I would describe that. And as her friend, I would describe that as typical. and that's funny to people maybe on the outside, but literally everything that Ronda does is I think she just lives to knock things out of the park, whether it's, hey, I'm going to debut on WrestleMania, or it's so I don't know if she even knows this. One time, so she had this dog Mochi when we were all living together, this massive Argentinian Mastiff. So I'm cleaning up after the dog outside, and I'm sick of it. This is not my dog. You know what I mean? Like you get kind of in your, you know how it is living with people. And I literally Jedi mind tricked Rhonda into cleaning up all the dog poop outside by being like, Rhonda, I bet I can clean up more piles of poop than you. And she just couldn't lose. You know what I mean? So even in cleaning up dog poop, Rhonda has to knock it out of the park, is what I'm saying. And inside I'm laughing and being like 2 days ago, but she's out there like, I've never seen the yard get more clean or in a faster time. So yeah, from every smallest detail of her life to debuting on WrestleMania and then doing what she did in her time at WWE. That's pretty typical behavior from Ronda.
That's a hilarious story. We saw sort of a, a tease of an eventual angle. People want so bad. The four horsewomen of old of NXT against the MMA four horsewomen. You and your three friends all in or around wrestling right now in the WWE system. How itching are you to tell that story?
Well, I mean, We're actually friends. You said it. Me and my friends, and we're hanging around, and we train together, and we hang out together, and those guys can't decide from one day to the next who they're friends with. So, you know, anytime they want to try to figure their own crap out and get that together, we're willing to face whoever wants to face us.
All right. Now, when we talk about this transition to MMA to pro wrestling, it's gone so well for you, Ronda, a few others historically. Cain Velasquez right now making some big news from the work he was doing and the work he might want to do. We've seen Chris Cyborg, your former MMA opponent, talk about it. Why is it such a natural transition overall? Why has this sort of been the new hotbed to find the next pro wrestling star? And can it be a start of many more crossovers in your eyes?
Well, I think it's the swing of trends. I think wrestling, if you look at the history of professional wrestling, there was very little distinction between what was considered a fight and what was considered a pro wrestling match. Especially if you look at kind of like the older British, some of the older Japanese stuff, even so far back in U.S. pro wrestling history. You kind of see that there's this blurred line of what was what. And I think that there came a time where the line between those two kind of delineated itself, and there was clear distinction. This is pro wrestling, this is fighting. And you know, you can talk about the up and down swings of either, but I think it's come full circle now to where fight fans, you know, you talk about like Ronda did it during her time in the UFC, blurring the lines, even professional wrestling there. It wasn't as visible, but I remember times where I had interviews for fights, for MMA fights, where I'd bring a guitar in, and just my goal for the interview was to just say the weirdest stuff I could because it stood out. Like that's professional wrestling. And that's as much as people, you'll hear people complain about, this isn't pro wrestling, this is fighting, but you're watching it because of the pro wrestling aspects of it. And then the same thing on the converse of that in wrestling. I think it's a great time, especially with the recent upswing in MMA. People can recognize like, ooh, this looks a lot like that stuff I was watching. You know, this is cool. And it's stuff that they're recognizing. And maybe it's people that wouldn't even have watched it before. But because they're fans of the style I bring to MMA, they see it happening in pro wrestling and it keeps them on the channel, you know?
It's just the right time. Absolutely. We've seen in the past, like I mentioned, Brock Lesnar, Ken Shamrock, many others, but we're seeing this movement again, and we're going to see you guys, NXT, moving to the USA Network beginning September 18th. 2-hour live show every week, 8 p.m. Eastern. Can't wait to check it out. Shanda, thanks so much for your time. The 2-time NXT Women's Champion, still got the strap. Still a lot of business to do. Best of luck to you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, and I can't wait to show everyone what we have.
Thank you. All right, Adam. I only wish we had more time. Full disclosure, sometimes we get 10, 15, sometimes we get 25, 30 with a WWE superstar. This was a quickly packaged one. Shayna's a good-ass storyteller from her early days of women's MMA when it was agree on the rules of the match beforehand to her sort of inside story of life with Ronda. I was entertained.
Yeah, that was really fun. We don't really get to hear Shayna talk like a human. You know, we see her on TV, and that's really the extent of what they do with her in terms of media, you know, meaning they don't do anything with her with media. So the fact that we got her, I really appreciate WWE for making her available. I thought the interview was fantastic. You obviously having all the MMA knowledge you do to go along with the wrestling knowledge certainly brought out that side of her that maybe we wouldn't otherwise see if someone's just asking her about the horsewomen and Ronda and, you know, so on and so forth. So I think she appreciated a lot of the questions that were actually about her career, which is, I mean, candidly, even more impressive than Rousey's in WWE because she's been there so long and held the title for so long and really been the only thing that has actually mattered in this women's division in NXT for quite some time. I think it was a really good idea that they're keeping the title on her going into USA Network. And I want to hear more of like Shayna Baszler, the person after this. You know what I mean?
And I was pumped up for her excitement level when you think about it like this. I talked to her. We could say she's been so surprisingly good and transitioned to the genre so quickly that it's like, damn, she should go up to the main roster. But What is she on the main roster? She's muscle. She's an also-ran. She's, I mean, we can't even get Naomi on TV. So the whole point is she's the perfect candidate to stay on NXT and be a part of that USA Network launch on September 18th because she represents that style so well. And really, it's like she's so unique in who she is as a female heel in pro wrestling these days that some of her limitations athletically and age-wise that force her to be more of a grinder, grounded type of fighter in the pro wrestling sense actually ends up helping her because she plays that note so damn well. Remember all the times she'd be up against like Dakota Kai and would like screw around like she's breaking her arm. I mean, she just sells that stuff as so believable that it was cool to get her psychology and see how legitimately exciting it is to these NXT stars who love the brand in the field, the Johnny Garganos, who actually don't want to go to high school and want to make this be the best thing it can be. Love it. I mean, talking about the teamwork that they all have to make those shows so great. Love that.
Yeah. And are we going to do feel spots? Because if so, it's an NXT for me and I can go right into it.
Rotate right into it. What do you got for me?
All right. Feel spot this week. BC, I think you saw it. I hope you saw it. Keith Lee versus Donovan Dijakovic on NXT television. Holy cow. You want to talk about, look, it wasn't a 5-star match because that's not what it meant it was supposed to be. It was two bulldozers going head to head in one of the most athletic, destructive, non-weapons matches I have ever seen. I popped massive for it. I am a little pessimistic that Keith Lee has lost a couple times. One to Punishment Martinez, who I'm forgetting his new name right now. And then again to Donovan Dijakovic when Keith Lee, I think, really has the highest ceiling of all three of them. But the match was absolutely fantastic. And as soon as it finished, I rewound NXT and watched it a second time back to back because I'm like, wait a minute. There's things I think I saw that I'm not totally sure I actually saw. That plus the tag team match, the championship match at the end of that show. That was one hell of an hour of NXT TV.
I missed it, Adam. I did get the teases and the instructions to watch it, and there's only so much time in a day. But I'll have to put it on my list after the 2019 Mae Young Classic.
And, no, four. Like, you can't not watch this. With NXT being on TV in 2 weeks, you have to see this match, and you have to see the tag team title match.
All right. I can't see it all. I'm sorry, people.
As long as you want to rent a room out in my house, see, I'm the landlord, and rent's due, you son of a bitch.
Whoa. There's no context or call for that. All right. My feel spot this week was something you teased off the top. The OC, the club, Gallows and Anderson, the Good Brothers, and AJ Styles being presented as absolute badasses on Raw this week. Loved it. Loved how they took over that contract signing. Loved WWE's creative in sort of building a bridge by them blowing up the contract signing. Now we have the bridge built for MSG when Steve Austin comes back. And I know we've already talked about booking this damn territory and having The Fiend apply the mandible claw on Steve Austin. But just sort of attention to detail and storytelling here. From Braun Strowman being mad at Rollins for Austin being a part of this, referencing that weird Skype interview they did a few weeks ago. Like, all this stuff is connecting the dots. But just in general, to not have the Good Brothers have to go to the comedic elements, to just have them be badasses here, interrupt someone else's thing, say, no, we should be number one contenders for the tag titles and the Universal Championship. And then having that spill forward into the Cedric Alexander storyline backstage. No, it didn't make sense. It didn't connect the dots. But sometimes they're just badasses looking for attention, and that's how you do it. I love that refreshing side. AJ, when he is a heel, is great, right? Feuding with Cena was great. But he's always a softish heel. He's always a...
I'm going to beat up John Cena.
Yeah, this was sort of him just being, you know what? Something inside me has changed, and I'm going to be a dick for the sake of being a dick. And I like that. I like that on AJ, all right?
Everything you just said was great. The thing that is getting overlooked by some people is when they're in the ring and it's three of them against the two, the first thing that AJ does is he rips up the contract. Then he stands behind the table, right? And Braun, to negate AJ, takes the table and flips it directly on AJ, like vertically, like knocking him out of the ring so they can attack the Good Brothers. That booking, so just putting AJ in that spot so the table can hit him in that way, was perfect, and it was emblematic of the rest of what you're talking about, of that was so well written and well booked to make Austin actually matter next week. And also, we do get The Undertaker next week on SmackDown. The show's at MSG, not sold out apparently, but I'm sure selling pretty well. I'm very interested in watching TV next week, I would say.
I mean, I don't want to over harp on it because it wasn't the best episode of Raw ever, but it was really damn good. And there was something more subtle about, I know we had the turn of Bayley, which was great. We went home happy, right? They didn't mail in the third hour, but it was subtly really good from segment to segment, story to story, and match to match. Match quality, fantastic. There was only a couple sort of in between matches meant to put people over that did nothing. I mean, I could never see if I have to never see the Viking Experience in another squash match, like, come on, like, it's tired. Get over it. Outside of that, really, really loved what I saw.
But this is like 5 weeks in a row Raw has been anywhere between good to great. Like, legitimately, it has been very well booked and written to the point where I don't realize I'm watching 3 hours of wrestling. Whereas on SmackDown, I'm like, man, this is 2 hours. It's taking forever.
That's the best way to know. Yeah. And also, even though I didn't love SmackDown, shout out to Corey Graves referencing Chris Jericho losing the world title, and then basically comparing that jobber to Peter Rosenberg of Hot 97 and Cheapy ESPN fame. So that was well done there. And unfortunately, Graves had to put out a disclaimer afterwards being like, friends can take shots at friends publicly without hating them. We're not in a war. We're fine. So, absolutely. Hey, how about Corey Graves' love life these days? Any thoughts?
You know what? No thoughts on that in particular, but Carmella, while we were taping the show, posted something on Instagram that she had a major health scare last week. So, apparently she's doing well now and everything's okay. So just shout out to her for, you know, getting over whatever that was and being in good shape right now.
All right. Hey, AEW, be better because I want you to. Thank you. Yeah, what do you got?
We got a little breaking news into the State of Combat Broadcasting Center here, BC. I'm wondering if you want to hear it before next week's show.
Is this pro wrestling related? What is it?
Pro wrestling related. Next week's guest on State of Combat. Brian does not know this. I'm breaking it to him right now. None other than the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Whoa, really?
Yes. Booking while talking. That's what the Silver King does.
What is this in reference to?
What do you mean?
NXT? This is an NXT related?
Talking NXT, talking WrestleMania, talking whatever the hell we want. We will have Shawn Michaels on the State of Combat next week.
I think that I can speak for you and our listeners.
You've had some sunny days, my friend.
We're going to have a few of them coming up with Shawn Michaels here. I'm
working on one other really big guest for the following week. I don't know if it's going to happen. It is NXT related as well, but we'll see about that.
When I play him this sound, and I know that this may not be the question WWPR wants me to ask him, but this is my show.
Don't lose us the interview before we get it.
What will he respond to this?
I'll just say for the record, I was not banging Sonny.
It's gonna be interesting.
All right, talk about a cliffhanger. Talk about a teaser. There's gonna be a Shaka and Osaka in my pants after this interview. Fired the hell up, the Heartbreak Kid. This is the show that delivers. All right, Lord, we almost went 3 hours today. We almost ended the podcast. Okay, over fighting over AEW. Adam, they got a shout. Okay, it's called October 2nd. Come original, bring it. All right, bring the pain. Win us over. All right, it may not be for you, but Balor Club's for everyone, Adam, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, happy marriage to Finn Balor.
Yeah, absolutely. And Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch.
Yeah, well done. Well done there. All right, that's it for the show. Thank you to our listeners. Follow us at State of Combat.
Say it with me, Mex America.
Say it with me, Mex America. By the way, this Alberto Del Rio, Tito Ortiz build to their MMA match is some comical BS. Also, 45-year-old Ken Shamrock coming back to Impact, having that feud with Moose coming up. I actually kind of care about this.
I've always liked Ken Shamrock.
It's a crap sandwich, but I'll eat it. It really is. I'm all kinds of down on that one. All right, the interview is over.
Kano, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Okay, now get out of here.
Well, that's
right
a little
now.
Rough, Randy.
No, yeah, but it is rough. Yeah, wrestling is a rough sport.
Yeah, Randy's right. We out.